Good morning, good morning. We have a quorum. Today is Wednesday, October 23rd, 2019. Time is 9:12 a.m. And now I call this meeting of the Dallas City Council to order. We're going to begin today with an invocation, followed by our pledges of allegiance, which will be led by Councilmember Chad West. Chair recognizes Councilmember West to introduce to introduce our guest who's here to give our invocation and to lead us in the pledge.
Thank you.
Please rise for the invocation.
I want to introduce Pastor Eric Folker, who is the senior pastor of the Kessler Park United Methodist Church in Oak Cliff. Pastor Eric is also a musician, a writer, and a blogger. His passion for social justice goes beyond mere words. He's been arrested at the White House defending immigrants and the Dreamers. He's officiated same-sex weddings at his churches in defiance of what some believe is against Methodist teaching. Eric was the 2017 recipient of the prestigious Kukling Award at Dallas's Black Tie Dinner. He is also an award-winning singer-songwriter and leader of Connections, a cover band that has raised over $350,000 for charity. Over the years, Eric's ministry has helped build 10 homes and a community center working with the Bonton Farms neighborhood, in partnership with Habitat for Humanity of Dallas. He is a very popular preacher and is well-known throughout Dallas. He tackles challenging issues of social justice in his writings and sermons. Eric's wife, Judge Denise Garcia, is the 303rd Family District Court Judge for Dallas. In 2004, she was the first Latina ever elected to a countywide state district bench in Dallas County and is currently the longest-serving district judge in that area. She was reelected for her fourth term in 2018. We're excited to have Eric and his leadership as a religious leader in Oak Cliff, and welcome him today.
Thank you very much, Councilmember West, and you're sitting next to my Councilmember Blewett. I'm happy to see that. Sorry you had to stand through that, members of the council. I did want to take a moment before I prayed to thank you on behalf of all of us in the city for all you have been doing in the past days since the tornado. I know it's been a busy time for our mayor and for all those affected. I grew up in Preston Hollow and used to ride my bike to get baseball cards at the 7-Eleven right there at Preston Royal. So I'm thinking a lot about all of you in this time, and thank you for all you've done. With that, let's pray. Gracious and loving God, as we gather for this meeting of the council today, we're still suffering the aftermath of the horrific storm on Sunday. And so it is that before all else, we pray this day to remember the tornado and all of its effects. We pray first and foremost for all those who have lost homes or whose homes have suffered great damage. We pray for school children who've lost schools, for faithful who've lost houses of worship, for small business owners who've lost storefronts. We grieve the loss of ancient and stately trees which give our neighborhoods such a sense of permanence and history. Comfort all these. Send your mercy and grace to them. Swiftly and very soon may they feel a sense of new life, new hope, and a return to a new normal that hopes temper the loss they have suffered. But God, in the midst of this tragedy, we pray also prayers of thanks. We give you thanks that there was no loss of life. We give you thanks for incredible technology and communication that allowed so many to be ready in the face of the storm. We give you thanks for first responders and their heroism, for utility workers, for neighbors helping neighbor in a time of great need. And finally, we give you thanks for these elected and appointed city staff in this room, for all they have done to serve your people in this time. We know they have been working tirelessly. We know that some of the problems of this storm will take a great deal of time to unwind. So we ask to give all of us in this city patience as we work through this uncharted time together. So many people have come together to support each other in the past days and help us to remember that kindness and mercy and compassion. And may the goodness of neighbor helping neighbor be replicated 1,000 times across your city in days to come. So having named all this before us today, God, we pray for these servants around this horseshoe who serve you as our elected officials. We pray for our mayor. We pray for our council members and their families. Each day they serve, we ask you to give them a wisdom instead of a thirst for power. May you give them thick skins when inevitable criticism, fair or not, comes their way. May you remind them each day of the privilege and honor it is to sit around this horseshoe and serve your people. And finally, renew their servant hearts each and every day, that they will always seek to serve the least and the lost and the left out. May they never hide behind the will and bidding of the powerful and well-connected, but may they show courage to lead your city in bold and new ways. Remind this council, O God, that how we treat the least, the left out, the powerless and the vulnerable is how we will be judged. Not by our charity to them, but by how our city policy lifts up or does not the least, the lost, the left out, the vulnerable. And at the end of the days of their service, O God, may you forgive all they may have left undone, conscious or unconscious. May you remind them of your unfailing love for them as your dear children. And may they never fail to feel your unfailing grace, strength, and love throughout their days. In your holy and gracious name, we pray all these things. Amen.
Amen. Chair recognizes Councilman West for the pledge as allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Honor the Texas flag. I pledge allegiance to thee, Texas, one state under God, one and indivisible. Thank you very much. You may be seated. All right, members, before we go to our open microphone speakers, I just want to take a brief moment of personal privilege, if you will, to recognize all the folks who've worked so hard over the past few days to help our city return to some degree of normalcy after Sunday's tornado. I want to especially recognize the efforts of our first responders who have done an amazing job. Dallas Fire Rescue, our police, sprang into action to make sure that no one was left trapped in any unsafe structure or was in a dangerous situation with respect to downed power lines or perforated gas line or anything like that. And we have been extremely blessed despite all of the damage that was sustained, and I actually had the opportunity to see the extent of the damage. I was actually in North Dallas on Monday with council members Kleiman, Narvaez, and Gates, and had an opportunity to visit council member Deputy Mayor Magoo, see some of the damage in his district. I know he was busy immediately helping with the cleanup effort in his district. The damage has been extensive to the property, the businesses, the homes, our streets in North Dallas all took some pretty direct hits. Not all of them, but several of them took some pretty direct hits. But I just think that we should consider ourselves extremely blessed that we did not lose a single member of our community. Not a single Dallasite's life was lost, not a single serious injury was sustained, which I think is both a miracle and a testament to our storm warning system and the advance notice that people had to take shelter. Like I said, the damage is pretty significant in some places in North Dallas. I've never seen anything like it in real life. I saw photographs early on, but I wanted to get on the ground and see it in person. I can tell you, in person, that the photos don't do it justice. Those of you whose districts were directly affected, I know you all have been in your districts for the past few days, and I'm sure you would agree that it's not like anything I've ever seen. I'm sure the same holds for you. But we are a resilient city. I've said that before, and I'll say it again. Dallas is a resilient city. And we will bounce back from this. I have no doubt about it. There's zero doubt in my mind that we will rebuild where we've been hit. bigger and better than we were before. And I want everyone who's listening to understand that. And I want to say thank you also to everyone, frankly, around the country that has reached out to various members of this council, myself, our city staff, our counterparts around the country and around the world are very concerned about us. And I want to say thank you on behalf of all of the folks here around this horseshoe. Thank you for that concern. We will let you know as things progress, you know, what types of assistance we might need. But at this point, we are very fortunate to say that we think at this point it is just a matter of property damage and rebuilding as opposed to, you know, a situation where we are trying to save lives. So with that, I will turn it over to Madam Secretary.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Good morning. Your first five registered speakers will be Charles Mann, Yafu Balogun, Stephen Benavidez, LaKoya London, and Sherry Lowe. I'll recite the speaker guidelines. Speakers must observe the same rules of propriety, decorum, and good conduct applicable to members of the City Council. Any speaker making personal, impertinent, profane, or slanderous remarks, or who becomes boisterous while addressing the City Council shall be removed from the room. Individuals are given 3 minutes to speak. You notice the time at the podium. When your time is up, please stop. Address your comments to Mayor Johnson only. Also, if you have any handouts, you can go ahead and hand it to the officer to my left and your right, as it will affect your speaking time. Your first speaker is Charles Mann.
Good morning. Charles Mann, 4515 Live Oak, Old East Dallas, District 2. Mr. Mayor, I would like to ask you, please, to appoint yourself to the Board of Visit Dallas. Now, don't take offense to this, but the fact is that you are the elephant in Dallas's circus. You are the ringmaster, the front man, and the star of the show. If anyone in this town deserves to be on the Board of Visit Dallas, it's you. Moreover, appointing yourself to the board will accomplish two things. First, it will restore much of the public's lost trust in Visit Dallas, because then we will know that we will have an accountable representative on the board keeping an eye on what they're doing. Second, it will send a message to everyone concerned that you, as mayor and the city, are putting your integrity, your transparency, and your accountability behind Visit Dallas as a business institution. That will create a paradigm shift that will change the cloudy culture that presently surrounds Visit Dallas regarding how it operates. Mr. Mayor, I beg you, I beseech you, to please seriously consider appointing yourself to the Board of Visit Dallas. As our beloved president would say, it's time to drain the swamp. MAGA.
Your next speaker is Yafu Balogun.
Good morning. The beautiful thing about being in front of the council, thank you. The beautiful thing about being in front of the council is that you can always speak loudly and be heard. So it's a very beautiful thing, and I'm fortunate to be here today. I come here today essentially to echo the ideas that were put forth by my good friend, LaShadion Anthony in McKinney. They talked about a black state of emergency here in the state of Texas. It's a proclamation that was written that really echoes a certain segment of the community here in Dallas, Texas. So I thought it'd be a good measure to go ahead and read it before the council today. It says, whereas it is the sentiments of our community that the state of Texas and local governments have demonstrated a pattern of practice of discrimination and bias in conduct through its law enforcement officers
and officials which deprives black and brown citizens rights protected under the Constitution and laws. Whereas the state of Texas and local government have declared war on black and brown citizens by conspiring to kill, injure, oppress, and threaten, intimidate, and willfully deprive citizens of their constitutional rights while acting under the color of law. Whereas the state of Texas and local governments harass and prosecute minority citizens both in daily interactions and as punishment for speaking out against said institutions. Whereas the Texas Rangers have demonstrated a clear bias and lack of integrity in handling of law enforcement officers' misconduct. Whereas, mostly recently, in the city of Fort Worth, law enforcement without prosecution, justification, or warning, without adherence to protocol with proper identification announced of their presence, murdered a woman of color, Atiana Jefferson, in her home. Whereas, recently, in the city of Dallas, law enforcement without provocation, justification, proper writing, without adherence to protocol, without proper identifiable announcement of their presence, murdered one Bottom John. Whereas both perpetrators, aforementioned murderers, Aaron Dean and Amber Geiger, were shielded from arrest and standard procedure as applied to any other criminal suspect with similar preponderance of evidence attesting their guilt. Whereas in 2001, McKinney Officer Joyce Vonderstein, without provocation, justification, warning, without adherence to protocol and announcement of their presence, murdered a woman of color. Whereas Clint Nyland, Santos Rodriguez, Jermaine Darden, Jason Harrison, Tony Temple, Carlos High, James Harper, Geneva Dawes, Jordan Edwards, Kristen Taylor, Sandra Bland, Ruben Garcia, Travis Crane, Bertrand Davis, Carrie Bradley.
Thank you very much. That's your time.
Our murder.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Stephen Benavides.
All right. As of the tornadoes, it's a good thing that nobody was hurt seriously or killed. I'm here to speak about the Office of Police Oversight specifically. This office was supposed to be operational by October 1st, and so this council has failed in its duty to the citizens and residents of Dallas in achieving that. But from my knowledge, there has been no complaint filed with the Office of Police Oversight, probably because it's not operational. So I wanted to read into the record the first complaint that we will be filing today. That complaint will be filed against the Dallas Police Chief Renee Hall for her actions on October 8th at the very first meeting of the Community Police Oversight Board. On Tuesday, October 8th, 2019, the Community Police Oversight held its first meeting after the original ordinance was amended to reflect years of racial justice organizing in the city. During that historic first meeting, Dallas Police Chief Renee Hall violated the code and the community's trust by subjecting members of the public to unprofessional and unnecessary physical violence, abuse, harassment, and the violation of their civil rights. Dallas Police Chief Renee Hall violated Title V of the Texas Overt Government Code by prohibiting the public to speak on a clearly defined agenda item and address the body regarding the item that was listed. After several members of the public attending the meeting with the express purpose of speaking on the agenda item objected, Dallas Police Chief Renee Hall requested an extraction team to clear the room using physical violence. The physical violence perpetrated by Chief Hall was a direct attempt to deny the public speakers the ability to exercise their rights under Texas state law. Additionally, video showing the physical altercation initiated by Dallas Police Chief Renee Hall was edited and deleted from the City of Dallas website directly after its occurrence. The editing and deleting of a public meeting because they are politically damaging to the Dallas Police Department and to the chief specifically violate the Internet Broadcast of Open Meetings section of the Texas Government Code, section 551.128. Texas state law requires that this that the internet broadcast of the full meeting should be uninterrupted, except for those purposes that are subject to the executive session, which this was not. Let's see, where am I at here? Again, this complaint will go before Internal Affairs and hopefully the Office of the Police Oversight. But unfortunately, the final disposition as written in the ordinance will be determined by the Chief of Police. Since the Chief of Police is the subject of the complaint, I respectfully request that she recuse herself from the decision-making process and instead have this complaint be considered directly by the Office of Police Oversight.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
LaCoya London.
Hello, everybody. LaCoya London, 3805 Olney Court, Dallas. I'm here because the Safe Fair of Texas had on Friday, which is high school and junior high kids day. Okay, you have Mr. Ledbetter, Steve Ledbetter, you know, running the fair. He's been running it for about 30 years. It's about time for his contract to be ended because what he was doing was the most heinous stuff I ever seen. And then you had a man by the name of Sammy McNapp. This man, a black woman, touched him on his shoulder. First he was addressing us while they closed the fair earlier than 8:30. And she touched him on the shoulder, and he screamed at her with malice and hate and anger, "Don't ever touch me," with anger. I mean, it was really uncalled for. And I had, out of all people, I happened to be out there. And I was like, "Sir, you don't want a black woman to touch you? It's not about race. It's not about race. She shouldn't have touched me." I said, "Sir, she's asking you a question." I said, "Did she push you a little bit, or did she grab you?" I said, "Because if you want to make it look like she assaulted you, then that don't make any sense when you just addressing the crowd, you know." And they also had little bitty children, little bitty kids crying because they all of a sudden cut the gates off earlier than they wanted to because Mr. Ledbetter decided to do it. Mr. Ledbetter is also a family of the Ku Klux Klan that used to run stuff around Dallas, Texas also. So I have a problem with the same old people running the fair. The fair is supposed to be our park, right? How is it our park when y'all sit up here and let the same Klansmen always run it? So the thing about it, we look up Sammy McNapp to see who he is while he was trying to be smart with me. Oh, my name is Sammie. And he tried to spell his name out like I gave a darn. And when I look him up, he's a constable for the Collin County Sub Courthouse Precinct 3. He's a constable that don't want to be touched. He's a public servant. So I'm like, the man in McKinney, you know, the little city councilman, we do have a black state of emergency. It's for everybody. The black, the browns, it's for everybody. Because guess what? We're being neglected. We can't look out the window. We can't sit in our house. What can we do? You know, you got an officer come in a person's house and kill them. 10 years. Are you serious? 10 years? I mean, I don't understand that. And then another issue, Mr. Broadnax, I hope you got a phone call from one of your officers. One of your officers was in a white little car. She was trying to get out the affair. Mr. Sammy McNapp, he told her, "Why won't you just drive around?" She said, "Sir, I have to get the precinct such and such." You know, saying it out loud. So he refused to let out the fair, another black woman. So I got a problem with a white man sitting up here playing with the black women. You know, I mean, I know y'all don't think women should have authority. I mean, the black man, the white man don't think that at all. So I don't understand that. I think Sammy McNapp needs to be disciplined and never work the fair again.
Thank you so much.
And Mr. Ledbetter needs to be dismantled from that contract.
Thank you.
All right, y'all have a great day.
Sherry Lowe. Sherry Lowe is not present, and Cynthia Smith is canceled. This concludes your beginning of the meeting. Open microphone speakers, Mr. Mayor. We'll now move to your voting agenda. Agenda item 1 is approval of minutes of the October 8, 2019 City Council meeting.
Is there a motion? Discussion? All in favor? Any opposed? Minutes are approved.
Thank you. Before we move to your consent agenda, we do have two individuals who have signed up to speak on two separate consent agenda items. Your first speaker is Pam Irvin Davis. Ms. Irvin Davis, will you please come forward? Ms. Davis is here to speak on agenda item 37.
Good morning. My name is Pam Irvin Davis. I live at 9824 Mint Branch Lane. I live in District 10, and I do also want to thank the City of Dallas. I just got power this morning. Yay. We were out for 3 days, and our home was very badly destroyed, so thank you for all of your assistance. I'm here in reference to this particular contract for the TxDOT landscaping. And T. Smith is one of the contractors that bid on it, African-American firm. And he was, at the time, the low bidder on this contract. And after 3 weeks of talking with staff, they decided to go with the second bidder, who was exactly probably about $6 to $7 million more than T. Smith. And we submitted a protest letter because, one being that this is where you want to try to build capacity for small businesses, and this was not one of those instances. And T. Smith's been doing business with the City of Dallas for quite some time as an African-American landscape company. And I have worked with several of the landscape companies who have actually graduated from being a subcontractor to being a prime contractor. And this was not the way you would want to try to build capacity within our community. He has worked on several contracts with the current contractor that y'all are recommending for award. And the response back to us was that they added more acreage, and his references weren't good. And he actually met the goal on the contract, which was the 23.8 with other African-American landscaping companies. And then I look at the agenda item, and I see that the company that y'all are trying to award this contract to, they only came in at 11%, and the goal was 23.8. But who did he reach out to? Because Terrence, he never got a call to ask if he wanted to be on this particular contract. So I'm here to really look at you, want you to look at some of these items, because this was an opportunity for capacity building. But I also want you as the city to look at how do you continue to build capacity in our communities, because you spend a lot of time working with building capacity with the contractors. I think y'all need to start doing some internal, because a lot of this is who you feel comfortable with. And it was, I believe it was because the people that currently work with the company Good Earth, they're comfortable with them. They're not comfortable working with someone new. And how do you get out of that comfort zone? Is that's how you give opportunities to other people. And so with that, I would really like for you to take this under consideration before you vote for this particular contract. Thank you.
Your next speaker will be Karen Fling. Ms. Fling will be speaking on consent agenda item 38. You'll be given 3 minutes to speak. You may begin.
I'm Dr. Karen Fling at 8351 San Fernando Way, Dallas, and I have a handout that should have been distributed already. I represent Eastlake Veterinary Hospital for agenda item 38, Canine Veterinary Services. I request item 38 be pulled from the consent agenda so that it may be reviewed more thoroughly. Eastlake is the most recent contract holder, and the perception from the majority of the officers and administrators has been positive. As well, Eastlake's 24-hour extensive care is also appreciated. Recently, we learned that the evaluator cited the competing bidders' outdoor dog runs as the primary reason we were not deemed most advantageous. Given this fact, it would be inappropriate to award the competitor the bid due to the following facts. outdoor dog runs are expressly prohibited by Chapter 51, Section 4.215 of the Dallas City Code. Outdoor dog runs are not allowed in the competitor's zoning district. Outdoor dog runs do not appear on the city plat map despite their existence. Outdoor dog runs are in violation of residential adjacency rules and are only 300 feet from residential properties. The competitor's illegal outdoor dog runs are the basis of this bid award. Further, the new bid process does not consider pricing. We were disqualified from consideration before even being requested to provide a fee schedule. Additionally, prior to making this decision, none of the evaluators toured either facility. When we attempted to formally protest, we were told by the city buyer, who is no longer with the city, to file an open records request. When filed, we were told no records exist. So our only recourse is now to address the council for item 38 to be pulled so that it may be reviewed more thoroughly. There are handouts that cover the following facts. We have a document one that shows the building footprint according to DCAD. The second document shows aerial views that show the existence of the outdoor dog runs, including the competitor's bid website displaying the outdoor dog runs. Finally, a copy of the code as well as the zoning as commercial services, which prohibits outdoor dog runs. Lastly, document four is a comparison chart showing the difference between East Lake and the competing bid. East Lake is code compliant, has staff 24 hours, extended appointment availability, open Sundays, 9 doctors, and is a women minority owned business. The competing bid does not have these same qualifications. So in conclusion, we respectfully request that item 38 be pulled from the agenda and also that a special use permit is not granted so that the city canine can be carried for properly and that there is equality in the bid process. Thank you.
This concludes your speakers. Mr. Mayor, we'll now move to your consent agenda.
Ms. Blackman?
Yes, I would like to pull number item 38 for further discussion, please.
Okay. Is there any objection? The objection is still ordered. Deputy Mayor Magoo?
It was just going to be questions about that item, so
okay.
I'll wait until discussion.
Thank you. We'll now move to your consent agenda. Your consent agenda consisted of agenda items 2 through 53. There were changes to the agenda. Agenda item 4 is being pulled by Councilmember Mendelson. Agenda item 23 is being pulled by Councilmember Mendelson. Agenda item 24 is being pulled by Councilmember Mendelson. Agenda item 25 is being pulled by Councilmember Thomas. And agenda item 49 is being pulled by Councilmember Mendelson. And agenda item 38 is being pulled by Councilmember Blackman. Therefore, your consent agenda consists of agenda items 2, 3, 5 through 22, 26 through 37, 39 through 48, and 50 through 53.
Is there a motion? Any discussion?
I have a point of information.
Yes, ma'am.
Just for clarification, because I didn't catch it. On the item requested number 37 by the speaker. And will I be in order to request that that be added to the pool agenda items at this point?
Too late.
Well, I just need a point of information. I don't let it pass. I just noticed the speaker just spoke on 38. Was it?
I mean, we haven't voted on it yet, on the consent agenda yet.
Well, I would request to pull it for discussion.
No, she's
is there any objection to that?
The speaker that just spoke, I think I
okay.
Wrote myself
yeah,
a note.
37.
Was it 37?
It is 37.
No. Good. Well, that was a motion to pull 38, I thought. And yeah. So now you're wanting to pull 37 as well?
I would like to make a motion for 37 to be pulled for discussion.
Understood. I'm saying, is there any objection to that? All right. Without any objection, so order. So now.
Thank you. Would you like me to restate?
Yeah, read the revised list now with 37 and 38.
Thank you. So your consent agenda for approval consists of agenda items 2, 3, 5 through 22, 26 through 36, 39 through 48, and 50 through 53.
Is there a second? Any discussion?
Yes.
Chairman Thomas?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I just want to speak about item 12, 13, and 14. We have one of our colleagues from the city of Grand Prairie here, Councilman Mike Del Bosque. Thank you, Mike, for being here. And those who've been on the council for a while know that this is some land. It came through initially through Mobility Committee. Chairman of Time Climbing, we talked about this particular piece of property going back to the city of Grand Prairie. And so I just wanted everyone to know we're in full agreement on that. It's been fully vetted through the process, City of Dallas and City of Grand Prairie. I think they're also one of the city attorneys, assistant city attorneys here as well. And so, colleagues, this is something that we worked on and we're in full agreement on it. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Chairwoman Arnold, did you have anything else you wanted to say on?
Thank you.
Okay. Chairman Atkins.
Yes, colleagues, on item 16, this was a Kroger Fulfillment Center. I just want to make sure that you know on August 28, 2019, the council approved the zoning change for Light Industrial District with deed restriction, volunteered by the applicant to restrict certain use. At the time of the council action, the owner was unable to excuse the deed restriction due to market restriction. Kroger purchased the property after 28 and was able to execute the deed restriction. I'm trying to make sure that everything is all right with the deed restriction. They can go forward.
Ms. Blackman?
Yes. On our today's agenda, we have a contract that DWU will be putting forth to look at White Rock Dredging. And I want to thank Parks and DWU for coming together to get this on the agenda to start the process of looking at how our lake can be preserved and working together. And I appreciate all staff's work and getting this done and putting it on in a very timely manner.
Chairwoman Arnold.
Yes, just for clarification, because I want to, and this is the first time I've pulled an item at this level of discussion. On 37, we pull the items, we will have to have an opportunity to go back and discuss. And then at the same time, as we may also have an opportunity to move for delay of voting action today. Thank you. I wanted to make sure I had that for the record.
That's correct.
I would like to speak to the individuals, so thank you.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Any further discussion on the consent agenda? All in favor? Any opposed? Consent agenda is adopted.
We'll now move to agenda item 4. Agenda item 4 is an ordinance amending Chapter 8, Boards and Commissions of the Dallas City Code, amending Sections 8-1 and 8-6, 1 providing boards that have rulemaking or quasi-judicial power to require public testimony before or during consideration of any agenda item, and 2 providing twice the amount of time for public testimony from an individual using a translator. This item was pulled by Councilmember Mendelson.
Is there a motion?
Second.
Discussion. Ms. Mendelson.
I move to approve the ordinance with the following change. Advisory board must provide an open speaker session at the beginning of all meetings to allow any member of the public to address the board regarding any topic of the speaker's choosing. Each member of the public wishing to address the board shall be allowed 3 minutes to speak, except that the board chair may increase or decrease the time for each speaker as necessary to accommodate all speakers present. Board members may not discuss or deliberate a topic that is not posted on the board's agenda.
Okay, so that's an amendment to the original motion. I didn't hear who made the original motion, but we have that for the record, right, Madam Secretary? Okay, so Ms. Mendelson, could you explain
that
you would be changing from the original motion by?
Point of order, Mr. Mayor, there's no second on the motion made by Councilmember Mendelson at this time.
That's good. Discussion. Ms. Mendelson, would you
thank you.
Explain
so
it?
The reason I'm making this amendment to the motion is that the motion for the ordinance is to comply with law, and we have to pass that, right? But what it gives us the option to do is what the law says is that we have to allow speaking at quasi-judicial or decision-making boards and commissions. But this amendment that I'm making is actually so that the entire spectrum of boards and commissions that we have all follow this rule, so that anybody in the public can come and speak before the group. And what this will do is it'll, first of all, alleviate any confusion that the public may have when, like, can I speak at this meeting? Can I not speak at this meeting? It'll also eliminate confusion for staff so that every board and commission that's not quasi-judicial or decision-making will have the same rules of engagement. It's more transparent. It's better government access. I think it's something that we should do. So I would appreciate your support.
Thank you. Mr. Narvaez.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Can I have the city attorney come up so I can make sure I understand this? Because I think this might make things a little more confusing for boards and commission members. So the, if you can explain the law, Mr. Interim City Attorney, on what the law actually says that we're supposed to be doing, what we're already doing as a council, as a city, and what we're, maybe we're not doing as a city that would, in order to comply with the law.
Right. Before you answer that, Mr. Case, I just want to say, first of all, thank you for, I was going to actually ask a different question of the city attorney, so I'm going to add one more question to his for you to answer, which is, can you, just for the benefit of everyone, can you also explain the difference between the types of boards and commissions so they'll understand what her amendment is really getting at? Okay.
Sure. So the Open Meetings Act talks about basically governmental bodies, and as Councilmember Mendelson said, the laws changed to address the open mic speakers, because what had happened was the reason for the state law change is because some city councils and other governmental bodies were taking action on an item and having the speakers at the end, so they were taking action before, you know, everybody had an opportunity. We didn't do that. I mean, we allowed open mic before, you know, we allowed discussion on particular agenda items, but there were some governmental bodies around the state that, you know, were taking action and then, you know, letting people speak after. So the legislature wanted to address that, and so that's why they adopted the law. And so under governmental body, under the Open Meetings Act, it talks about rulemaking and quasi-judicial bodies. So when you adopted your rules for the council, we included that. So that addressed the council. And so with respect to the action here today, it addresses those rulemaking and quasi-judicial bodies, boards and commissions, so that those would, have these provisions. And so what Councilmember Mendelson has made the motion for is for all boards and commissions to basically allow an open mic so that, you know, there's an open mic at any of the boards and commissions so that people cannot have an opportunity for an open mic. And as she said, you can't discuss the item because that violates the Open Meetings Act. And so what this does is what the ordinance does is to address the open mic for rulemaking, and it's been extended to all the boards and commissions to allow for an open mic period before those boards and commissions.
So on Ms. Mendelson's amendment, is it referring to specifically be all open mic at every single board and commission meeting, or is it specific to agenda items during open mic for these boards and commissions?
Well, my understanding is it's all board and commission meetings. Obviously, if there's an agenda item, so if a board
right.
is going to meet.
So my question is Ms. Mendelson's amendment going to ensure that there's an open mic, meaning just like we do here at council, that anybody can talk about anything they want to at any board and commission meeting, or is Ms. Mendelson's, is that what her motion is saying, or is it going to be interpreted as that the public can speak on agenda items specific to that board and commission meeting that day?
The motion says advisory boards must provide an open speaker session at the beginning of all meetings to allow any member of the public to address the board regarding any topic of the speaker's choosing. And so that's what the motion is, so that if a board is having a meeting, they'll have an open mic at that.
So just like at council?
Correct.
So, Mr. Mayor, I would like to amend that the item be open, the open mic be specific to agenda items for those meetings.
Second.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Discussion on the amendment to the amendment. Deputy Mayor Magoo.
So Actually, Chris, if you could wait, one more question. Does anything we're talking about in this ordinance or the amendments and amendments process have any impact on our council committees?
No. This addresses boards and commissions.
Okay,
only.
Because they're going to have opportunity to speak on any item on the agenda when it comes to the full body. We don't have open mic and other stuff at committees.
Right. This does two things. This, you know, will adopt the rules with respect to those rulemaking and quasi-judicial, and then extend it to the advisory boards. And as the current motion is that they can discuss. People can discuss an item on the agenda, so it's not truly an open mic where you can talk about anything. It's you can talk about an item on the on that board or commission's agenda.
Okay, thank you. And then I guess just a comment to the amendment, Mr. Narvaez's amendment. It appears that I think we want to have it as open as we can regarding any item on the agenda, but to have just total open discussion about anything seems to be a distraction or potential time waste at some of these committees if that ends up in the committees, boards, or commissions. So that's my reason I second it.
Ms. Mendelson, on the amendment to the amendment.
Thank you. The reason why I can't support that is because when I have sat on commissions, first of all, not that many people of the public attend, so I don't think it's a big waste of time. And part of this allows for the chair to decrease or increase time as they see fit based on the attendance. But the issue is that a board or commission, if they don't get to hear things that are not on the agenda, they might miss something really important. So let's say it's the library. Somebody comes up and they say, you know, I'm really having this issue. It wasn't on the agenda, but maybe other people on the board go, you know, we should probably talk about that. Let's get it on the next agenda. For homelessness, there may be the Homeless Commission. We may have had an agenda, but someone might bring up a topic that we weren't aware of as commissioners. So I think this is part of our duty to hear from the public, and I would not want to restrict that. And if, I mean, even today, our full council, we don't have that many people here. We didn't have that many speakers, and frankly, we really haven't ever since I've been on. So I want to open this to the public, and I hope that you'll agree with me.
Before I recognize you, Mr. Narvaez, I wanted to ask the city manager a question. So what type of sergeant-at-arms or security do we provide at these, say, advisory board meetings? Like, I remember I was served on the Martin Luther King Community Center board over a decade ago, and we were in a room at the MLK Center with really, I'm not even sure we had city staff at all. Maybe we had one person or something, but who would be there to maintain order? And if someone didn't want to leave, didn't want to stop talking, didn't want to yield, to escort them out and make sure that our chairs and our volunteers who are serving these positions are safe, who would be handling that?
Thank you, Mayor. Can't speak for every meeting, but typically those meetings are conducted in city facilities, and they typically have security personnel at the building. And in cases where we know there may be particular issues, that we do have additional security that is asked for and requested by the people conducting the meeting. So we typically have that type of presence, maybe not in a great way as we might at a city council meeting, depending on the issue.
So no additional resources required, really, to maintain order at these and make sure we don't have any issues. I just want to make sure that we're not asking citizen volunteers who are volunteering a chair, something like the MLK Community Center Board, to take on a whole much more responsibility for maintaining order in these meetings and that type of thing. But
no, I don't believe so.
Okay. Mr. Narvaez.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. So I would like to amend my amendment. to add to within the committee's scope. That way, you know, that way, well, I guess I need a second first. So within the, or do you want me to explain it first?
Well, I just want to make sure I understand what the amendment to your amendment says.
Yes. So the amendment to the amendment was going to be that it's specific to agenda items, and then adding that specific to agenda items within the committee's scope. That way, because I agree with what Ms. Mendelson was saying as far as, you know, in case somebody brings something up that's different about homelessness or police or, you know, and libraries, but that so that folks don't show up to the library board meeting, a committee board meeting, and then all of a sudden start talking about street repairs, you know, and on Forest Lane that have nothing to do with the library. That way it's within the scope of that actual committee. So that's why I'm adding that. So I don't know if I need to amend it or just add to the amendment.
Is there any objection to him amending it, to Chairman Narvaez amending his amendment?
And just to clarify that it's not the agenda item, it's within the committee scope.
Correct.
We're replacing
within committee
those
scope.
Words. Yes.
Okay, without any objection, the amendment to the amendment is amended. Now we're back on your amendment to the amendment as amended. Okay, so
I'll second it.
All right, now we're back on it. Mr. Basil Dua.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Mr. Queso, I just want to get clarification. I know that Mr. Magoo asked already, but on our committee, on our committees, how is it not impacted if we're...
Well, this just addresses the boards and commissions. That's the action that we're taking.
But today, with the change in legislation, how does it not impact the ability to speak on agenda items for our committees?
Well, it talks about deliberative bodies, and so the committees basically make recommendations to the council.
Okay.
And so you didn't adopt it in your rules that the committees would have an open mic.
Okay. And so would that the various not city boards and commissions, like for instance the lane plating advisory group that we have, Mr. Atkins and myself and Ms. Arnold have with the EPA, that's subject to open records, but it's not through the city. Like, will those bodies also be subject?
No, these are just boards and commissions.
To the Dallas City.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
I just wanted that clarification. Thank you.
Chairwoman Gates.
Thank you, Mayor. A question on the regarding, I think you mentioned, if I could ask Ms. Mendelson, did you a time frame that you said 3 minutes? Are you...
Right. So the motion says that...
Could maybe staff get us the motion written, since it's pretty lengthy? Could you print it for us? That'd be great. But if you go ahead and read it while we're...
Okay. So I'm sorry. So it says each person wishing to address the board shall have 3 minutes to speak, except that the board chair may increase or decrease the time for each speaker as necessary to accommodate all speakers present.
Okay, so the board chair has that flexibility like our presiding officer does. I think I could support that. I mean, we can evaluate, this year to make sure there's not any unintended, consequences. But what I would suggest to the city secretary's office is maybe, this can be a change for all our board chairs and some kind of training for board chairs on open mic or the speakers, and if it includes, as the amendment does now, that it's to the scope of the body, so they would be aware of that, and then how they can limit it to 30 seconds if it's 200 people or whatever it might be. I think it's putting them in a position that they haven't had to deal with before. Are there attorneys typically at all boards and commissions?
No, we don't go to all boards and commissions.
Yeah,
meetings.
So they won't have the staff that we have available to us at the time. So I think it'd behoove them to be able to have some kind of training on how to manage the speakers if necessary. So I would make that suggestion, and then, if it becomes abusive, I think we can look at the policy again, but hopefully I think it's, could be used as an opportunity for the public in a constructive manner to be able to address or bring up issues that need to be addressed by these committees. So thank you.
I did want to make one comment. If an item is on the agenda, it's pretty clear about what there will be a discussion. If the motion is that within the ambit of the board or commission, then you're going to get into an issue of I think it's within, their scope or not. I think that gets a little, it just would get a little tricky, right? Deciding, okay, is this within our scope or not? Sure, with the library board and potholes, but, the question may get a little close, and then there may be, I think it is or I think it's not. Obviously, if it's something posted, you look at what's posted, and that's pretty clear, kind of like you all have. You have agenda items, and people can talk on those agenda items. So that's just my comment about, this, the issue of within the scope as opposed to items on the agenda.
All right, Mr. West, and just remember we are on Mr. Narvaez's amendment to Ms. Mendelson's amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. So the final, just to my own, for my own clarification here, the final amendment was to just keep it within the scope, right? You can speak on any topic. So if it's park board, you can talk about park-related items. And the chairperson of that committee would then make the determination if it's within the scope or not.
Correct.
I get it. I support the final amendment. Thank you.
Or the, you know, the chairperson, and then they could take acquiescence from the body like y'all do, you know, if people want to come up. So,
Chairwoman Arnold.
Just a question on the amendment on the relevance to the topic, and I did want to just support what Mr. Caso is saying, because you could have someone who talks about the roads leading to the library, and then that person does not have an understanding, is this really the scope or not, and then deny the person. So we do need to do, and I would support what Mrs. Gates' statement also, we evaluate, and if it doesn't work, we need to tighten it up and make some modifications. But also on this particular item, I did just want to make a comment. I am concerned if we're giving the power and we don't have the infrastructure to maintain decorum, because I do want us to not, as a city, not to have to witness any of that madness in our city meetings when people don't understand your 2 minutes are up, your 3 minutes are up. So we need to look at this very carefully if we pass it today, so that we don't have chaos in our city meetings and our committee meetings, and we do need to continue to educate our population as they come to speak so they don't get out of control. Thank you.
Deputy Mayor.
Mr. Caso and Chairwoman Arnold kind of took the words out of my mouth. It just, when we have it tied to a specific topic on the agenda, it seems to be cleaner, safer, more appropriate for discussion. I hear the concern. I mean, there's nothing that stops anybody from emailing the board and commission and the chair, or talking in different times when they catch them to get an item on the agenda to have those discussions. It just feels like what's going to happen is most of the time it'll be great. We want more people to come. We want more people to engage. That's a good thing. But when it can be used for alternative purposes, we end up with our volunteers and sitting in for long periods of time and maybe not getting anything accomplished on what they're supposed to be there. It seems to put our volunteers that are putting their time in and putting them in a situation where they're not going to be as effective as they possibly could be. So those are my concerns. I will likely be opposing this amendment.
Chairman Narvaez.
Mr. Interim City Attorney, do we have to pass this today, or can we wait 2 weeks? Because it seems like there's a lot of questions. This amendment was kind of, sprung on us, and we didn't really, we're discussing, but now there's a million new questions coming up that now I have even more questions. And in order to save time, could we delay this for 2 weeks and not have anything hurt us?
Well, what I would prefer would be to adopt the ordinance that addresses, because I understand you don't have any issues with respect to, the quasi-judicial and the rulemaking bodies, right? That's what we have to do under the Open Meetings Act. This other issue about the others, you can certainly, discuss that at a later time and bring that back kind of separately. So
and make sure
you have some more
discussion. I don't think you did before, but just make sure you explain just very briefly why we know we need to address the quasi-judicial and the other types of boards that we have to address.
Sure, because the new law addressed deliberative bodies or governmental bodies are quasi-judicial or rulemaking. So that's what the Open Meetings Act says. So that's a requirement. Just like y'all did with the council, you would be doing it with those, like Board of Adjustment and things of that sort, where they're quasi-judicial. So I would suggest you adopt the ordinance as it is today, and that's the requirement.
So the original agenda item is doing what we have to do with those boards. Ms. Mendelson's amendment is expanding that to, again, I'm going to use the MLK board as an example. I guess that's advisory or whatever they're
right.
called. But
yes, sir.
She wants to cover them all, but we really probably need to to move on something to deal with the state law. Did you have anything else to add before I recognize?
So at this time, I'm going to withdraw my amendment, and then I'm going to, if Ms. Mendelson doesn't withdraw her amendment, I'm going to vote against it, and then so we can pass the original motion, and then ask that Mr. Merrifield assign that to one of the committees so that we can discuss that and get it really get it tightened up, because I do believe in the spirit of Ms. Mendelson's motion for amendment, but I think we need some more time to discuss it, because I do want it to pass and be a good amendment to those rules. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
That sounds like a reasonable approach to me, and your amendment is withdrawn, so that means we're back on the original amendment as offered by Ms. Mendelson. Ms. Mendelson?
So I'm willing to withdraw this, and hopefully we'll put this on the agenda for government performance. Thank you.
We'll put it somewhere, but it will get addressed. That's a promise. Okay, so now we are on the original motion that was not amended in any way by anyone. So back to the original agenda item. You want to read it again, Ms.
Yes,
Secretary, really quickly so we can vote on it?
An ordinance amending Chapter 8, Boards and Commissions of the Dallas City Code, amending Sections 8-1 and 8-6, one, providing boards that have rulemaking and quasi-judicial power to require public testimony before or during consideration of any agenda item, and two, providing twice the amount of time for public testimony from an individual using a translator.
All right. All in favor? Any opposed? The item is adopted.
We'll move to agenda item 25, move a little bit further into the agenda. Agenda item 25 is authorized 3 one-year service contracts with 2 one-year renewal options for the Overcoming Barriers to Work program with One Open Arms, Inc., DBA, Brian's House, in the amount of $36,698, Two International Rescue Committee, in the amount of $76,833, and three, the Salvation Army, in the amount of $40,337, Most Advantageous Proposers of 8, total not to exceed $153,868. This item was pulled by Councilmember Thomas.
Is there a motion?
Move approval.
Second. Discussion, Mr. Thomas?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I just had a few questions on this particular item. If we could get, I see Jessica's coming to my. Good morning. Looking at this particular item, where it says Overcoming Barriers to Work program, is this part of the $1 million funding that was set aside for overcoming or addressing the barriers to poverty?
This funding is actually CDBG funding that was allocated specifically for programs that connect to workforce programs for those supportive services.
Okay. And so when I see overcoming barriers to work, it's kind of broad. And with the RFP, what was the ask of those who applied for it?
Sure. So we had a few specific asks in the RFP. Effectively, we were looking for the supportive services, and we required connections to programs that specifically work to train and provide people with workforce training, but we're not looking to fund the training itself. Instead, we were looking to fund the types of programs that enable people with significant barriers, such as transportation, child care, language, and other issues, to be able to engage in those so that they could become ready to actually participate, or so that they could actually engage in those programs. We provided some specific service suggestions, such as child care, transportation, and skills development, but we also indicated that a proposer could recommend a different service if they could, within the RFP, justify why that service was critically important for their targeted population to be able to participate in workforce training programs. And so that is actually how one of our proposals came forward, with a digital literacy program that really helped people to overcome language barriers that prevented them them from being able to participate, for example. So this program is very specific, and it's really intended to serve that niche. So somebody may have the opportunity to participate in a program that trains them for a certificate, but if they can't get there because they don't have childcare in the evening, or if they can't get there because they just don't speak English well enough to fully participate in the program, that's what we were looking to serve on that kind of continuum of service care for these clients.
Okay. When was the RFP released?
The RFP was released in, I believe it was released in July.
So it was over the summer while we were on recess. Okay. How many responded to the RFP?
There were a total of 8 proposals submitted.
Okay. Can you give me a copy of that information? I need to go back and see if, because this is similar to what we had a discussion about a couple of weeks ago.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Tell me how we went about. Who's here from procurement? Let's start. Come on down. Good morning.
Good morning.
Welcome back.
Chin.
I think 2 weeks ago we had the same type of discussion.
Yes, we did.
How do we go about informing potential contractors, for lack of a better way of putting it, about this RFP?
We use our electronic portal Bonfire, and there are a number of commodity codes. So anyone registered for the commodity codes that are tied to this RFP will receive a notification. In addition, if the department has a list of potential vendors, we send it out to those vendors as well.
Okay.
And we send it to the Chambers of Commerce and work with the Office of Business Diversity to push it out to as many people as possible.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Chairwoman Arnold.
Thank you. I did not pull this item and perhaps should have. Just following on just comments, colleagues, with my concern, on the Salvation Army, we're giving, what is this, $40,000 that they're asking for. Do we have someone, can you tell me what the Salvation Army is supposed to do with this contract? What was their proposal?
I can explain the way that the funding was allocated. So we had 8 proposals that submitted, and we had a scoring committee that was made up of some of the individuals that have been working in our workforce collaboration team over the summer that came together to score them. The highest scoring proposer was funded at 100% of their request. And then we moved down to the second highest scoring proposer. At that point, we decided to fund the second 2 highest scoring proposers at 73% of their request. Had we funded the second highest scoring proposer at 100% as well, we would not have had sufficient funds to make a significant contribution to the third.
So tell me, what is the Salvation Army? What did they propose to do?
What did they propose?
Yes.
Okay, excuse me, ma'am. So they are proposing for funding that would support their comprehensive employment program for the clients that they serve through their Carpe Collins Social Services Center. Specifically, their program provides career coaching opportunities and job skills and life skills pre-training to enable those participants to engage in higher-level skills and higher-level jobs. And it's offered within the context of their social services center, which serves as a shelter center for individuals who may be victims of domestic violence, as well as individuals who may be participating in court-ordered substance abuse treatment, and for other individuals who might be homeless or have experienced homelessness. So that's their primary target, is this very vulnerable population, and a large majority of the individuals that will be served through their proposed program will actually be individuals within
their shelter programs on site. However, they will also continue to serve some of the clients who have come through for their more general case management as well.
Okay, thank you. And colleagues, we voted earlier this year to support, I think, the new center that is in, I think, Councilman Navarre's district. And I would imagine that that has been a good cushion for them for their services. I am here, however, concerned, and I want to put this on the record. If anyone is here from Salvation Army, they can speak to it. But the Salvation Army walked out on my community on their center here in Hutchins in District 4, and it was not handled properly. Community was not made aware of their intention to walk away and abandon that community. So I cannot support their request for more money when they have not done due diligence to my constituents in District 4. Some of their remarks was, well, they can come to a center, another center, 2 or 3, 4, 5 or 10 miles away. That is not the purpose. As they committed to this community in District 4, they should have continued serving, and they should have handled the separation a little bit differently. So I cannot support giving them any money at this time. And if we can, offer to delay, and if not, for further discussion. If not, I will vote against it with the underscoring of Salvation Army and also a follow-up to us handling our business a little bit more transparent. And you mentioned it was handled in July. But we need to get a handle on how we're giving these contracts, and it has to be more, or we decided then just to give these other partners whatever because of dot, dot, dot. We need to have some clarity as to why the same old buddies are getting the same old dollars. But I did want to put that on the record for District 4 and that we were abandoned by the Salvation Army. Thank you.
Chairman Atkins.
Thank you, Ms. Arnold. Question back to the RFP. Could you tell me what date did RFP went out? What date?
July 15th originally.
And July 15th?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
And when it was due back?
I believe that we had it open for a total of 4 weeks.
To when?
For 4 weeks.
Can you tell me the date it was due back? It should be a date. It should be a closing date.
It may have been. The posting date was July 15th. I do not remember the date that it was due back off the top of my head.
So when it was approved, what date was approved?
The approval?
For the clients. Yeah, what date?
You mean the recommendations?
Yes, uh-huh.
The committee, once the proposal.
What committee?
The evaluation committee. So when the RFP is released and it remains open for a period of time through the bonfire procurement system, and then there is a committee of evaluators that is staff members that have different roles or relationships related to the programming that's being evaluated, and that committee then reviewed and scored the proposals, and that those scoring is what informed the funding recommendations.
Okay, so if we had a committee, what committee would it went to? If the mayor had
It was an evaluation committee. At the time, there were no council committees that had yet been appointed.
I see. If we did have a council committee, what council committee would have been?
Currently, as the current format of council committees, I would imagine that it would have gone to the Workforce, Education, and Equity Committee.
Right.
Or potentially quality of life. I'm not entirely.
Can I speak to the city manager, please? Mr. City Manager, would you answer a question for Mr. Atkins?
I'm kind of concerned that, we didn't have committees, but we voted on issues, the item that should have went to committee. Is there any reason why this item couldn't been holed up until the committee had been formed, then to go through a committee to be vetted properly?
Counselor?
I'll ask a question.
Answer. So first, my understanding is that this particular funding, the $153,000, as well as the categories, was approved by council as a part of our CDBG annual submission and our annual work plan as it relates to what we intended to do with the dollars, particularly around drivers of poverty. That item was approved by the city council, not the sitting council, but the prior council, I believe, in June of 2019, before you went away on break, because we had to have identified the annual plan activities and the types of efforts to submit to HUD by August which is their deadline. So the council did review. I do believe this item was discussed by and with the previous council. I'm not sure what committee, but it is actually identified specifically as a part of your budget that was just approved, where we allocated funds. Again, CDBG, $153,000, and then the $846,000 that we discussed that was the general fund to form that $1 million to deal with drivers of poverty. So the item actually was included in the budget as well as discussed prior to the submittal of the budget for council consideration.
Okay. Was there a deadline that we had to have all submitted for the CDBG? We're running short. I'm trying to think. What was that deadline? Do you know? It was a deadline, so we were trying to face.
Again, I get in different cycles, but I believe it was mid-August, August 15th, is when we have to submit our annual action plan to the federal government. And so we get council's approval so that we understand exactly what categories are appropriate for our plan, as well as when we do the RFPs in the summer, so that we can begin those services as close to October 1st as possible, because we've gone through the processes.
Thank you.
Chairwoman Arnold.
Thank you. Just quickly, I realized, too, Mayor, I did want to go back and clarify something. As I listened to the city manager and we talk about, and also Councilman Atkins, what committee would have gone to and what was the nature of the service, I will underscore the fact that we did have a center in District 4 whereby those services could have been tightened up. We had seniors that were abandoned. Children after school program was abandoned. I don't know anything about the workforce that could have been offered through this center. So we have a population that more than likely, I think you mentioned, in shelters. So our community would not qualify to be in the shelters. They would be in the community. And this particular site could have been serviced to address some of those issues if it had still been in existence. So the question now for me, City Manager, so that we can not come before the public and be told that and reminded that, oh, you voted on this allocation. Is the city manager here? Oh, where's the city manager? Okay, just let me wait just a minute. No, no problem. I know everybody's pulling on you. But for me, it's so what can we do within the process legally so that we are made aware of when the scoring is done and you have these individuals who have received monies. Is there something somewhere in the process we don't get here to the day of or the voting cycle, and then we have questions about those recipients, similar to what we're going to discuss with the maintenance with Good Earth and Mrs. Davis concern? How do we get to that? Or is that something I would ask you to think about that, so that we'll know ahead of time so that we can address it?
Let me think about that.
Okay.
As it's an open procurement, it's kind of
tough
to bring it potentially to a committee. That's why we tend to get the guidance on what you'd like to see, the scope of what you'd like to identify, and then allow staff to go and review that and bring it to you. Let me talk with our purchasing.
Right, because we want to make sure that when we're giving the money that you don't have duplicative efforts that are the same. Well, it's a couple of things. But number one, if that particular group is advocating and they receive monies, but they can't give us, for example, I need documentation on Salvation Army. How many constituents are you serving that live or that are impacted in the southern sector? What does your data look like? I'm going to be like the mayor now. We're data-driven. So I want to know data as it relates to the southern sector from the Salvation Army and any other group that takes our money from this point on, so we're not constantly sitting here going, well, what are they going to do? Does that make sense?
And that does. Okay. And I think that is beyond specifics around the procurement itself. If we've got to do a better job of providing backup information that supports the types of services, the people receiving the services, I think we can do that within the context of an RFP. So we'll figure out how we strengthen that
process.
And
also we need to begin to market. This is to take the words from Councilman Tennille Atkins. We need to market a little bit better, so we're getting some more partners and some more applicants, so we're not being redundant in our distribution, identification of partners, and the distribution of money. Thank you so very much for the city manager and the mayor. Thank you.
You're welcome. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor? Any opposed? The record reflects that, and the item is adopted.
We'll now go back to agenda item 23. Item 23 is authorize a one-year interlocal agreement with 2 one-year renewal options with Texas A&M University Health Science Center, DBA, Texas A&M University College of Dentistry, to administer the Clinical Dental Care Services Program to provide dental health services to low to moderate income seniors 60 and older residing in the city of Dallas for the period January 1st, 2020 through September 30th, 2020, not to exceed $370,000. This item was pulled by Councilmember Mendelson.
Is there a motion? Is there a second? Discussion? Councilwoman Mendelson?
Yes, thank you. So I pulled this for a couple of reasons. Number one is I'm just going to reiterate my concern when we were talking about budget that we are funding dental care that is clearly something that the county should be doing, although I support us passing it this time, and I will be voting yes. So I just want to say it's an important service. I'm glad that no one's going to fall through the cracks. On the other side of things, I also want to share a little bit of data with my colleagues. So in 2018, the council allocated $375,000 to this program, but only spent $246,000. This past year, the council allocated $400,000, and only $212,000 was spent. The other things you should know are the outcomes. So unduplicated clients had a 2,000-client target, of which 1,700 were served. Patient visits, the target was 3,600. 1,900 were served. Procedures provided, 6,000 target. 3,849 served. So the program isn't actually meeting the goals that we're establishing. I'm wondering if, City Manager, if you'd be able to share with us what happens when we've allocated $400,000 to this program but only spent $212,000. What happens to those remaining dollars?
And so I can talk about remaining dollars, but it's my impression that there's probably some context that may need to be provided to the numbers in either our stretch goals or anticipated, but I'll let Ms. Galashaw, the Director of Community Care, share first, and then I'll respond specifically to what happens to excess funds.
Sure. So I'm going to speak a little bit to the issue that you identified. I want to kind of bring to your attention that is something that we have been aware of in terms of the allocations being much higher than the contractor has delivered consistently for a couple of years. We actually had some conversations with the contractor this year, and we took a lot of steps to try to make sure that we addressed that. First and foremost, as we were coming to the end of a one-year agreement with two renewals, we actually took the effort, we developed specs. We released them. We actively went out. We did research for both for-profit and nonprofit organizations that provide dental services for low-income clients, and we actually sent those specs out to those organizations. Now, we kept that open, and we didn't get a single response other than the current contractor. The truth of the matter is, other than a few individual clinic locations or as a sub set of services with another service providers, Texas A&M is really the only entity that does this type of service on that large of a scale. And so with that, we move forward with an ILA process. In having conversations with Texas A&M, we've identified that one of the biggest barriers for them to be able to serve the number of clients that they target is that they have limitations being just within the two physical clinics. There's just only so many chairs and only so many services, and they're effectively maxed out. And so when we were talking about this program, we didn't want to tie up the full allocation if we knew it wouldn't be expended, which is, but we also learned from them that they are in the process of opening a new clinic in southern Dallas, and that they're going to be able to expand their capacity capacity to serve. And so we set up this program a little bit differently, where that they would get a $250,000 allocation, and the remaining dollars is actually contingent upon opening that clinic, because we do not, and nor do they expect, that they would be able to fully expend the allocation with only the two clinics that they have. Another thing to know is that we actually pay them on a per-visit rate, and so even though they were not meeting their target, we were not paying for services that were expected to be at this level. We were only reimbursing based on what was delivered. And so, yes, there is a gap, and we're aware of that, and we've taken a lot of steps, I think, this year with our process, both in developing, designing, going and doing outreach, trying to solicit potential other bidders. We even set it up in a way that we could fund by clinic so that we could ultimately support multiple entities. But in the end result is that Texas A&M was the only organization that wanted to take it on.
Councilwoman Mendelson.
Oh, no, I'm not done. I think the city manager was going to address. So last year, $400,000 was allocated to in the budget to that program, but only $212,000 was expended. So I'm wondering what happened to that other money.
So departments on a monthly basis have to submit their target budgets based on what they believe their expenditures will be, whether that's their own personnel and or contracts. And we provide that throughout the year. And should they not reallocate those funds, i.e. to a existing program or a new program that would ultimately, in many cases, come to this council to amend current contracts, those dollars would fall into fund balance and be looked at by our budget office to offset any overruns and or particular projects that council may have deemed important that we have done throughout the year but were not previously appropriated. So the end result would be it stays in the department until, in fact, they spend it and or it falls to fund balance, where then budget looks, and then they come back either mid-year or at the end of the year and appropriate the dollars in the budgets that were over budget, and the council approves that as well.
So am I correct to understand then that the, let's say, almost $200,000, that they could have expended it in under $50,000 increments without coming to council?
They could, but I'll let Jessica respond specifically, since she managed the
yes, budget. Specific to this contract, this contract doesn't terminate until the end of December. At this point, we've also, one thing that we've seen with Texas A&M is because they are a similarly large institution like us, the contract negotiation can often take a couple of months of back and forth and wasn't getting executed until January. So this contract is actually through December, and so the dollar amount is actually for through the end of September, but there are still 3 months to go. So it is currently actually encumbered against the current contract.
So do you actually think that they're going to be able to spend $370,000 this year when they haven't ever spent more than $250,000?
No, I don't. I think it's likely that they'll come probably be a little bit higher than that by the time we get to December. But with those being FY19 dollars, it is currently encumbered, so it's not something that we would be able to spend on something else because it's committed to this current contract, which is another reason that we've tried to create the flexibility with the new contract for FY20 so that we don't get stuck in a situation where we have a large amount of dollars that are encumbered and committed to a contract that we're not certain we're going to be able to expend.
So because you're asking for $370,000 that only goes from January through September for 2020, right, for this item, but you've never spent even $250,000 in a full calendar, in a full fiscal year, I just think that's a lot of money that's going to, frankly, give you flexibility to spend it on things that are never going to come to us.
Councilwoman, and so that's incorrect statement.
Okay.
If the funds have been encumbered, which they are, in the allotted amount of the full amount of the contract, which Jessica indicated that they now do differently and they're not encumbering the entire amount, in this case, since it is encumbered and we're already in the fiscal year 20, when in fact they pay the final invoice, and if it's under that, the rest automatically falls to fund balance and it does not stay in their 2020 budget.
Okay.
So they do not get to reallocate those resources. And different from how they'll proceed in the future, they'll encumber a smaller amount, and there will be whatever that difference is will be remaining in their budget, and you're correct. They could execute smaller contracts that are under $50,000 if intended to do the same type of service and or something within the spectrum of what council has authorized their overall budget for. But in this case, when the encumbrance has moved into this current year, when they expend it, they will execute it electronically, and it would automatically fall to fund balance, and they would not get to spend it. It would go directly into last year's budget.
Okay. Well, with that, I'm just going to repeat that I'm in support of this.
Chairwoman Arnold.
Thank you. Give me a clarification on the record again. Where is this clinic located?
I will actually, Paul Hoffman is here. He's with Texas A&M. I don't want to speak too much to their new clinic since
Well, I want to know where the clinic is where we are right now.
The current two clinics, excuse me. One is located in Northwest Dallas in the North Dallas Shared Ministries location, and the other is in the East Dallas area.
All right, so we have the facilities in the North and the East.
Yes,
that we're saying on the record. Does this program provide transportation to seniors who need to get to these locations?
No, it does not, but we have another program that provides transportation for seniors.
Do you make these seniors aware of the transportation options to these clinics?
Yes, we do.
How do we do that?
Because a lot of times the seniors
Do you do that? What method do you disseminate the information to the seniors?
When they call seeking the service, we would make that recommendation and do a holistic assessment of their needs and recommend all of the services.
Right, so I need a ride to the great program. I need a ride to the clinic. So what do you tell me?
I would tell you to.
Excuse me. I live on Polk Street, 3902 Polk Street.
Okay. So I would have you screened through our medical transportation team to determine your eligibility for that program or for other medical programs
that
exist.
How do you do that?
Excuse me?
The medical team, how are you assessing me on the telephone?
Well, so we ask a series of questions, including the senior's age. We ask them if they're paratransit eligible, which we can then confirm with DART and make a recommendation there. We also have the ability to provide coupons and other support for some of the traditional transit services that exist. And we work closely with organizations like the Area Agency on Aging and other organizations, as well as Parkland itself, that provides some transportation services specifically for medical.
All right.
So we would screen for all of those and determine what the best
fit
was.
Would be free. Is there any options for free transportation to these facilities?
There is an option, yes,
okay.
through the program, the medical transportation program.
All right. I just want to make sure there are no barriers. That's what I'm trying to get to right now. No barriers to them getting there. All right. So the other piece would be the question, is there a mobile service aspect to these facilities?
I do not believe there currently is. Paul, correct me if I'm wrong.
All right, so there's no mobile where you can come into the communities and just give a free scanning. We don't have that. I'm just asking. I'm not trying to.
Do you do any community screenings?
We did. But you have it now? Okay, but do you have it in 2019?
We have not, but if you would encourage us to do that.
I'm going to encourage you to do that.
Because we went to numerous places that you're probably familiar with, Jubilee, for example, Juanita Craft.
Thank you. So let me just say this. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much, and then my time is limited. We will need to talk a little bit more off the record, but I want to, not off the record, but offline, but just so that I can be an advocate, continue to be an advocate for seniors. So many people and many of us around the horseshoe, and I'll say us, if you're not at the age of 70 and 80, we don't really understand the impact of dental health on our lives. The failure to have adequate dental health maintenance can contribute to a lot of diseases and oftentimes death. And so we want to be proactive. And I think the other piece, go back to Mr. Tennille Atkins, council member, and I support his call for marketing. We have to sell this program, and I have to get off of my laurels to do a more aggressive sale on this program. So I want to tell you that I'm committed to that because there's no way in the world we should have any money left. With all these seniors in the city of Dallas with needs, we shouldn't have any money left. And so we've got to take care of our business of marketing, change the way we get information, change the way we engage our constituents so that we know we are advertised and we are lauded for being a great city, a wealthy city, but we're not getting the wealth to the folks who want to be wealthy, and that means health-wise. So whatever I can do, number one, I'm going to keep advocating for it, but I don't want to cut the money, city manager. We want, what we need from you is the guidance through your staff to get a marketing plan out to help us sell this program and get our seniors so that they can have healthy teeth. They're not interested in grills. They're not interested in whiter than white. Some of them just want basic teeth, you know, basic whatever you can get in there so they can eat, so they can smile, so their self-esteem comes up. They may be older at 70 and 80, but they're not dead. All right? So that's all my messages, sir. And so if we can talk about mobile in the southern sector, that's fine. You said you're in the north and the east, but we want to bring it on out to the south.
And I do want to visit with you, and I want to bring Dr. Jones with you as well, because
perfect.
I'm certainly an advocate for that. And I want to remind you that when I came to you 3 years ago, you were one of the ones who said we needed a location in the mm-hmm. south. And it's in, I'm not sure I'm going to be able to pronounce your name right, Bazadula's.
Oh, you did good.
Councilman Bazadula, and I have a meeting with you on Halloween.
Okay.
It's going to be right there at Hatcher Station. And I wanted to reinforce what you were saying about the importance of working with medical, because as you know, it's right there by Parkland's facility. We're going to be working very closely with them, because you were right. Mm-hmm. I'm so glad that you understand that. That dental care, I don't know why it was separated from the body way back when.
Right.
But it's so important in terms of the overall impact in a person's health.
All right. Thank you so much. And we're going to move it on down south.
Thank you.
35. Thank you.
Mr. Bazadula.
Thank you, Mayor. I just wanted to ask a couple of questions. And thank you, Ms. Arnold. I think that allocating more is I believe that this is going to continue to grow. I didn't realize that the cat was out of the bag, but I'm really excited that we have the next clinic coming down into District 7. I think that we will see the program grow a lot now that we're going to be servicing the southern sector. And I wanted to just ask about some data about the program.
Sure.
And how it's grown. Do you have any with how many seniors you've serviced year to year, and so we can see kind of some growth numbers?
It depends how far you want to go back, because I've been involved in this even before I was at A&M. This actually has been, and Councilman Atkins knows this because he and I go way back, this service goes back to 1963 when the city of Dallas actually offered this service. And then when Jan Hart was city manager, there was a nonprofit created called Dental Health Programs, which eventually became Community Dental Care. A lot of the locations were co-located with Parkland, and I was CEO of that organization. I left because I was there for 16 and a half years. I left because the management of the board changed dramatically. And I was getting in an adversarial position.
Sir, my time only stops for staff. Do you mind just giving me some numbers? The past 2 years.
It's similar to what Councilman Mendelson had said. Those were the numbers. I think it was about 2,000 unduplicated patients, almost, or 1,700.
1,738.
Yeah. And then we're averaging about a 1.5 visits per patient, I think.
1,924 last year.
Yeah. So it's as Jessica was saying, we've kind of reached our capacity at North Dallas Shared Ministries and the one in East Dallas, Agape.
Mm-hmm.
It's taken me 3 years to raise the funds to have our own clinic, okay? And it'll be about double the capacity of our partner clinics, and we'll actually own it. And you know we're working with Fraser,
yep.
You know, purchasing the land, and then yep. We were able to get funds. It's $3.2 million of funds.
Mm-hmm.
That I had to raise to pull this off, $800,000 for equipment and $2.4 for the building. So it is going to increase our capacity dramatically, but the numbers that Councilman Mendelson said are the numbers.
Well, I think that this is a great addition. I understand the concern of the county, the county's role and where it plays. I know that this was passed in the budget, but I strongly encourage us to pass this. This is something that's going to service a lot more seniors. I think that it'll be interesting for us to see the metrics at this time next year or a couple of years down the road to see, you know, what that growth looks like. But I hope that we can get the support unanimously for this item. So thank you.
Thank you so much.
All right. Councilmember Mendelson.
So the only other thing I was going to mention is that one of the data points I pulled, and perhaps, Jessica, you can talk to this, but my colleague, Councilmember Arnold, has mentioned several times about the seniors being 70 or 80 years old, but can you share with us the average age of the patients?
It's around 70, but to reinforce what she was saying, we're seeing 60-year-olds that haven't been to a dentist in 25 years. So if we can get them to come in earlier, it's going to help prevent things from getting even worse. It's not unusual for someone to come in at 60 and only have two or three teeth, and we're having to do full mouth reconstruction, dentures, and things like that. So to answer your question, 69, 70 is about the average, but we'll see some right at 60. We'll see some as old as 90.
So to your point, I agree with you. I think actually we should be looking at this as not just exclusively a senior program, when really I think the dental care is not happening in the 40s. And it really should be more focused toward indigent care.
And we are using other sources of funding to do that. These locations that we're serving, we're seeing all ages, okay? And fortunately, the state did create something called the Medicaid waiver. You're probably familiar that the state did not expand Medicaid under the Affordable Care Act, but most of the hospitals did get together and put together what's called a Medicaid waiver, and we're participating on that. And that's how we're funding these clinics.
Excellent.
For the most part.
Thank you.
Any other discussion? Nope. All right. All those in favor? Any opposed? Nope. Motion carries.
Well, now
City Secretary.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you.
We'll now move to agenda item 24. Item 24 is authorize a one-year service contract with 2 one-year renewal options to administer the Senior Services Ombudsman Program by providing nursing home ombudsman, which includes receiving, investigating, and resolving complaints, and assisting in obtaining goods or services for seniors residing in nursing homes and assisted living facilities within the City of Dallas for the period October 1st, 2019 through September 30th, 2020. Senior Center, Senior Citizens of Greater Dallas, Inc., sole source, not to exceed $116,868. This item was pulled by Councilmember Mendelson.
Is there a motion?
Move to approve.
Second.
Discussion, Ms. Mendelson.
Yes, so this is a really important program. I completely support it. That said, again, I think this is a county function. The ombudsman is looking at health care for the seniors that are living there. And then I just want to share with my colleagues the funding that this program gets that is federal. Well, first of all, the total program is about $780,000. They get about $178,000 federal, $194,000 state, zero from the county, and then we're giving them $116,000. This is really, again, a county function that we're taking on because it's necessary for our people, and I support it. However, I really think we need to be working with the county so that this program moves over there. Thank you so much.
Yes, Chairwoman Arnold.
Thank you so much. And I'm glad you're supporting it. But I also want to speak now that I have a little experience with working with a family member that was in one of the facilities and needed ombudsman. You'd be surprised the need. And so for having just some basic issues that surround a facility that often impacts the city, we need to make sure we're taking care of our business. I mean, you go into some of these city, centers and you walk in, you're smelling sewer. You know, you have surrounding sidewalks that are cracked. You have infrastructure that the city's responsible for. So I want to make sure that we maintain our role in the conversation. And oftentimes, you don't really understand what advocacy is until you actually are in that position. And so I have been in that position, and I can tell you I was very upset with the facility, and I had to access the service myself just on behalf of that loved one. So we need to keep fighting, and we need to, you're right, work with the county, work with the other jurisdictions to make sure that when our citizens or loved ones are going into these facilities, we don't have to worry about whether or not they're going to die in that facility because of neglect And so I want to continue to ask you to strengthen that program. Just make sure also in your districts that you actually come in contact with and maybe visit some of these sites so you'll know what these constituents are going through and why it's so important for us to continue to be an advocate. Thank you.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor? Any opposed? Item's adopted.
Agenda item 37. Item 37, authorize a three-year service price agreement for grounds maintenance services of Texas Department of Transportation properties within the corporate boundaries of the City of Dallas for the Department of Public Works, Good Earth Corporation, lowest responsible bidder of three. Estimated amount of $17,971,062. This item was pulled by Councilmember Arnold.
Any discussion? I'm sorry. Is there a motion first?
Mayor, council members, I want to offer a motion to delay this particular vote if it's not a serious impact on the services so that we're able to remand this to a committee to understand this process. Because I see we have an extensive relationship with Good Earth, and I do have some concerns about the quality of work, especially in my district when it comes to some of these properties that we've identified as TxDOT. And so if this, as we stand now, I think we need an additional partner to help with some of the work that we have in our district. My district is turning into a trash bin.
Mayor, I second the motion.
Yeah.
So I won't have to get off on my sermon this morning. But, all right, so I don't mind that if we can
hold
do
on,
that.
Hold on one second. I just want to make sure before you got a lot out there.
Thank you.
The motion is to defer?
Yes, sir.
And there a second? Is there any discussion?
Well, the question would be to remand for the 2 weeks. Would it give us a chance, Mayor, if I may direct the question to you, for us to get it to a committee in time to discuss or individual conversations, briefings?
Yeah, I think you just need to structure the motion the way you want and then let the body debate it.
All right. I'm just trying to think in terms of the first meeting. So I would defer this for November 13th.
So restate the motion, please.
My motion is to delay this particular item until the voting agenda for November 13th.
And there's a second for that discussion. Ms. Arnold.
I want to say thank you.
Mr. West.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I generally...
Point of information, Mr. Mayor. Well, this...
That scared me a little bit.
Sorry. I get a little close to the mic. Is this no longer going to a committee? Because the way the motion read is we're just delaying it till November 13th. So that's my question.
So this is why we work together as a team. So I would delay this particular item to November 13th with it being remanded to a committee of the mayor's choice.
So the motion was just that it get delayed to a later agenda meeting. Now, what happens in the intervening time is not something we need to take an official action on here, but that's the motion, to delay it to a subsequent agenda meeting on November 13th, which was seconded, and we are now to Mr. West.
All right.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. So my question, I generally support, you know, whether it goes to committee or is delayed. I just wanted to hear from staff to see if that will impact our contract. Just what are the ramifications, if any, by doing that? You know, I think that will weigh in on whether I would support it going all the way back to committee, which would delay it probably, you know, an extra, you know, half a month or so, versus sending it back to us here at full council. So what are the ramifications, if any, in the delay?
Chuni Chin, Interim Director of Procurement Services. The current agreement is valid through the end of January, and there are funds remaining, so we would be okay if this was moved to a subsequent agenda or remanded to a committee.
Thank you.
Mr. Broadnax.
And thank you, Mayor. And so I missed some of Councilwoman Arnold's motion and reason and rationale. I guess my question would be, what is it that would be discussed or staff needs to be prepared for at committee?
So what we need to look at, number one, we need to look at the TxDOT. There is TxDOT relationship with us in terms of contracts? Number one, are they giving us some money to offset, to support this this contract with Good Earth? In addition to what we're giving, what is the state giving? Because I've been told that the state has allocated some funds for TxDOT properties. But number two, what is the data showing in terms of their service? Number three, how often, go back to data, how often are they servicing these areas? Because as I've stated in my district, it seems that they're servicing them every other 3 months. And so for me, it's just more about what they are doing, where's the state, how effective is this particular group or company in terms of servicing or meeting the needs of our district? And number two, can we look at the equity, use the equity lenses to share some of the wealth in the city? Because if you have another competitor, have a competitor who has similar services and they are able to serve, then I would simply say it will be an opportunity for us to bring on perhaps another vendor who can help clean up our city. But in particular, I'm speaking on District 4 because we need additional help. I mean, it is a quality of life issue. So those would be some of my arguments.
Thank you, Councilwoman. And so I'd say
data.
The first two, I think one staff can provide that irrespective of, I think, this particular item. The policy question on whether or not this project and or contract should be broken apart, I think for the most part, one, we get reimbursed by TxDOT for these particular services. The frequency, I think the effectiveness of Good Earth is I think I'm not directly familiar with their specific work, but my impression is that they do good work when we schedule them to do it. If the question or concern is to have us revisit if there's an opportunity to break this down into different types of contracts to provide more of an opportunity, we can do that. And as the procurement director indicated, we have until January to be able to do that. And so my impression would be if that's the will of the council, just in general, beyond the first two subject matter that you brought up, we can go and do that absent of waiting until November if that's the direction of council.
Well, let me just, since I have the mic quickly, in terms of data, and Mayor, if you don't mind, if I could, since Mrs. Davis is here, I'm simply advocating for distribution of this wealth so that we can meet the needs of a community that is struggling for a healthy environment. And so I've seen the work of Good Earth, but I've also seen the lapse of time that it takes us to get from one site to the next to clean, and that's also combined by the fact that we don't have a strong policy with our homeless initiative. So you have some of this debris that's being stored under our TxDOT properties because of the homeless issue. And so Ms. Davis is here. Can we give her at least 3 minutes, sir, Mayor, to speak quickly?
She can use the balance of your time, but
I
wasn't sure where you were going with this.
What I meant by that is
I wanted to make sure folks, there's a queue of folks who haven't gotten in to say anything at all yet, and you're really on your second round of speaking. So I wanted to let them say what they need to say and then have her use the balance of your time, which is about a minute and a half, if you'd like. Okay, from your second round. So, Ms. Gates.
Thank you, Mayor. And it sounds like we could delay this. I think the conversation needs to focus on how we're going to bid these large contracts out. I would remind everybody this is an open procurement. We can't start talking to either of these vendors at this point. I'm assuming lawyers, if you want to answer. So if we delay this, I think it's important for all the council members to realize that the procurement process remains open, and so we need to not have any further discussions with these contractors. Is that correct?
That's correct, until the award is made by council.
Okay. So if we keep it open, then what would be the discussion we could have at a committee level?
If it's at a committee meeting, then it's an open meeting, so there is no prohibition. The prohibition is in the Code of Ethics, and it says that proposers and bidders on city contracts cannot lobby council members.
Okay.
But that doesn't mean that the council committee can't discuss it.
So we can discuss it as a committee if we should move forward or rebid this process. Okay. Correct. All right. So, and we can, you know, I know procurement comes typically through government performance and financial management. I know Ms. Rach is not here today, but we can, I can discuss with her trying to get this on quickly. We might have a few other options, correct? Like, extending the current contract if we couldn't get it, if we were to have to rebid or?
We could. That would require the incumbent to agree. The incumbent is Good Earth.
Okay. All right. So we can work on that. But I just, I reminded all the colleagues that this is an open procurement, and so we can't begin. And that's why we have this contested process, that they wrote a letter, and we're aware of that. And we can discuss it here and in a committee, but not individually with any of the vendors that, that bid on this project. So,
Chairman Atkins.
Yes, sir. Ms. Arnold, you did ask a great question. And I guess the question would go back to TC. Many, many years ago, and right now, TxDOT is responsible to cut the right-of-way. And we took the responsibility with our TxDOT to pay for it. So to do that, there would be something when our lobbyists have to go back to down in Austin and find out why they're not paying their fair share. So that would be something that we could not get in the committee right away. That would be something down the road. Magic, you want to chime in on that? Because I'm trying to make sure that, Ms. Arnold, that you know that, that they are not paying for it. I don't think they're going to pay for it right anytime soon. So I think that's the situation between the city of Dallas and the state legislature. Is that correct?
Morning. Good morning, Honorable Mayor and Council Members. Magic Delgaffrey, Assistant City Manager. So we've engaged already with TxDOT. As you know, throughout the budget process the past few weeks, they contribute about $1.2 million to do 12 cycles, 12 mowing cycles and 3 cleanup cycles. The prices have gone up, and they have agreed to increase their contributions. We're still working out the numbers with them. I don't know what that number is. We'll bring it to the City Council once we complete the discussions with them.
Okay. So what is TxDOT responsibility in the city of Dallas? How many intersections? Not just 12. What is their responsibility?
Their responsibility or their there's several agreements between the state.
Question. It's very simple. What is their responsibility in the right-of-way to cut the grass, and how much money would it cost if they do it?
So anything that TxDOT owns as a right-of-way, that's their responsibility.
So that is a number. So could you go back and ask TxDOT how much would it cost, and we can figure this out, how much the taxpayer is paying to do that? Because we are taking taxpayer dollars from the general fund to cut the grass. This has been going on for the last 12 years, and with this the issue between the state and the city. So, Carolyn, you brought it up. I'm trying to make sure they're clear and transparent that that's their responsibility. They're not doing it. We are doing it because we don't want our right-of-way to look like trash.
So, Councilman, if I may.
Yes, you may.
It's not that simple.
Well, I know it's not simple, but it's still, excuse me. I got the mic. It's our responsibility to go down to the state and say it's your responsibility to cut the right-of-way. And our taxpayer is paying that money. We're paying millions of dollars out of general fund to cut the right-of-way. It's not our responsibility. So I'm just asking the city manager, we need to go down to the state and say, we can't afford to do it. We can take that money to spend elsewhere. And I've been asking the same question over and over for 11 years, and I get the same answer. We're not doing it. And so if you go to the committee, you go to your committee, Ms. Gates, that's the question you should ask. And we deserve an answer. Thank you.
Mr. Blewett.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I support the idea of delaying this because the more questions that are being asked, the more questions I have. I look at this as a fairly large contract. I don't know a lot of the specifics of it, and it seems like this conversation can keep going. So the idea of taking it to committee and having some of these questions asked there so we can be more knowledgeable. I mean, for example, the idea that we would be voting on a three-year contract without any council action going forward. If that's normal, I'd like to know more about that because, well, we can just keep on going with questions, so I'll be supporting Ms. Arnold.
Mr. Brown, did you have?
Yes, thank you, Council Member. Thank you, Mayor. One, it's a price agreement, so it locks in our price and obviously smooths out what we think market impact might be over the next 2 or 3 years. So that's why we're entering into more than a one-year contract. As it relates to, again, I think we can send a letter to TxDOT and get a response back. I think from what I understand and hear, and I think what's familiar in many cities, they have a mowing and or cleaning schedule that is regional based, and they allocate a certain amount, and they come at certain frequencies. And I think historically the city has requested and or desired a better level of service. And so that's what we're paying over and above for to do that. And so, again, that won't change, in my mind, the level of an amount of this three-year agreement going to a committee. As it relates to the substantive things that I think this council can share an impact at a committee level, I know we're excited about committees. This is a procurement item. We've got to cut grass. We've got to pick up trash. It's a matter of the level of service that you want. I think that can be discussed in committee. That won't directly impact this particular procurement because it's already been bid with the scope and the expectations of what was responded to. If, in fact, the council wants to change that and or expand, add an equity lens to this and look if, in fact, we can break this down in an efficient manner, I would much rather you give us that direction today and have us bring back an item to cancel this particular procurement and let us go on about the business of discussing that with staff in procurement and our Public Works Department and Transportation Department and our Office of Business Diversity and going back out with an RFP that can be done and assembled within the next few weeks so that we can actually get it on the street and get it bid on and then come back to you before the current contract expires at the end of January. If we wait until the middle of November to have this same conversation, then we'll have to ask for an extension, and it may not be reasonably provided. So, again, I would argue if you want to have a policy discussion around how we break down the contract, I think we can do that at one-on-ones or whatever and give us the guidance. But we understand equity. We've broken down contracts before. Quite honestly, this contract probably should have been broken down into smaller increments to provide for that equity, but I think from an administrative standpoint and it's a reimbursement basis, we didn't want to do that. So again, I would just say we can talk about it in committee all day, but we've got a current RFP or bid out, and we either need to act on it or advise us to cancel it and to go back and revisit how we go about structuring the new scope to ensure that more participants can do it and maybe provide a better level of service or be intentional about what we're doing in certain segments of our community. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Broadnax. Ms. Arnold, you had a minute and a half on your last round.
All right, because now we've been told legally if she's part of the contract, we can't talk or hear from her. Is that what we were saying? Mrs. Davis, I was going to speak to you about Ms. Davis. So the attorney, I want to be here before. All right, please. Don't stop my minute right now, please, Mayor.
Okay. She may talk at the public meeting. It is explicitly authorized, so this is okay.
All right. So while she's coming, then I was going to offer simply a motion to rescind this particular bid.
Withdraw your previous motion to delay
The council, I will delay it, but the mayor, the city manager is, am I out of order? All right. I want to delay it, but as he just mentioned, if we keep delaying it, we're going to talk about it. But if we rescind it, we can just shut it down and go ahead and get new bids. Thank you, Mayor.
We're going to let her speak for the remaining minute and a half of your second round.
Well, yeah, my biggest concern, and just to for the record, I am not either of the vendors. I'm an advocate for supplier diversity in general, but my concern is that, one, that we're trying to build capacity, and Good Earth has had this contract for well over maybe 12 years. And I do acknowledge what Mr. Broadnax talks about, because I think that it would be a great idea to look at splitting up a contract to give more opportunities for other contractors. Specifically, what Ms. Arnold referred to is looking at, you know, maybe the various communities, because some of these contractors live in these communities, and so they will have a little bit more time to spend working in these communities. But when you just consistently give contracts to the same contractor, and you're right, it's just litter and garbage that has to be done, it's grass, there's things that have to be done. And we just want to make sure that we have minority and women-owned companies that can perform these types of services and be accounted for.
Thank you so much, ma'am. Mr. Kleinman.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I just want to remind my colleagues that we're a service agency, not an employment agency, and that we went through a procurement process. All these vendors, regardless of their status, had opportunity to bid on this contract. So we just need to continue to get services in our medians, in our roadways, in our right-of-ways, and especially in these TxDOT right-of-ways, just continue to get them cleaned up and maintained. So rather than getting in a big trod down over this particular contract, if we want to look at doing that on future contracts, we can do it. But the main thing is we need to continue to provide the services to our citizens, to make sure that these TxDOT right-of-ways are maintained, and you know, just award the contract as our procurement department went through an RFP process to get the contract. I didn't quite notice, but I'm curious how many people were notified when this procurement was initially posted.
This went through Bonfire, through our normal process, so everyone under this commodity code. I'm just looking for the exact number. We did have three bidders, mm-hmm. and then the number notified would have been, you'll excuse me for a second.
That's okay.
I don't have that number in front of me, but it would have been hundreds, and I can get
right.
you the exact number.
Right. Yeah, I mean, you could follow up with that number later, but sure. it's not like we just put an RFP out to one vendor. I mean, we notified hundreds of vendors, regardless of their status, regardless of their MWB or anything. They were all notified. We only got three bids, and one was non-responsive. So I appreciate the policy concerns. And we can work on that, but we do need to move the city's business forward and award the contracts so we continue to work in these areas. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Basil Dua.
Thank you, Mayor. I agree with Mr. Kleinman. I think that this item needs to get passed. We need to continue service. And if we're not going to, delay is there's no clear outcome of what a delay is going to do for us if the overall goal is to work policy. I think Mr. Broadnax had a good point that it needs to be decided on today so that we can get moving with the RFP. So I think that I will support pushing this contract through as is. And if it doesn't look that we have that support, I will support killing it altogether today so that we can allow staff to go through the procurement process and do it appropriately. But I hope that we can come to an agreement and get this passed. It is a large contract. I do think that we have a lot of questions and a lot of things to work out, just as we do with, you know, just about anything that comes up with city business. But I think that right now we need to get this contract underway. Yes, ma'am.
In response to Councilmember Kleinman's earlier question, the invitations were sent to 225 firms, and 35 people downloaded the specifications, and three submitted bids. Thank you.
So before I recognize Chairwoman Arnold for her final round. I just want to remind everyone, so the motion that's before the body right now is just the motion to delay until November 13th. It has not been moved to adopt the original item yet, so we'll have an up and down vote on that motion, and if it passes its delay, if it fails, we would actually have to take this item up again if someone wanted to move it. So, Ms. Arnold.
Thank you, Mayor. I'm glad. Thank you for that clarification. I simply want to ask once again for the delay to November 13th, based on from my scope of as District 4, we do need to have the data on the service provided. We need to understand what the state is supposed to do and what they have failed to do. Why are we doing what we're doing, and what can we do to do a better job? So there are a number of questions that have to be answered. And from an environmental and a health standpoint, council members, I'm going to ask that you support delaying it to 13th of November so that you can fully vet the process and understand the dynamics of what the relationships of the state and the city is supposed to be, because our people are living in absolute filth when it comes to the gateways into their communities and the highways and the byways.
Thank you.
And we deserve better than that. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Arnold. Okay. Is there any further discussion on Ms. Arnold's motion to delay to November 13th? All in favor? Record vote's been requested. Record vote's been granted. Madam Secretary.
Please start voting.
This is for the delay. Yes is for the delay to November 13th. No is against the delay.
12 have voted. 13 have voted. 14 have voted. Voting in favor, Mayor Pro Tem Medrano, Deputy Mayor Pro Tem McHugh, Council Members Mendelson, Arnold, Blewett, Resendez, Gates, Narvaez, and Atkins. Voting against, Councilmembers Basil Dua, West, Mayor Johnson, Councilmembers Kleiman and Blackman, Councilmember Thomas absent, vote taken. The motion passes, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Madam Secretary.
We'll now move to agenda item 38. Item 38, authorize a 5-year service price agreement to provide veterinary services for the police department's K-9 and equine units and the fire rescue department's K-9 unit, Casa Linda Animal Clinic, Inc., in an estimated amount of $671,600, and the Equine Hospital at Lone Star Park, DBA Lone Star Park Equine Hospital, in an estimated amount of $75,000, most qualified respondents of 3, total estimated amount of $746,600. This item was pulled by Councilmember Blackman.
Is there a motion?
I move to delay till November 13th.
Second. Discussion, Ms. Blackman.
Given the information that we have before us that was given to us earlier this morning, I'd like to ask a few questions on what would it do to prolong this contract and not renew it immediately? Do we need to separate it because of it's an equine and a canine contract to get that on the horse moving? And then about the questions about a prohibited dog run and this information that was given to us. And just to get, I mean, we, and I think I'm hoping that 2 weeks can get us, or 3 weeks, because it's a fifth Wednesday, that you're not hitting up against a window, and we can get some of these, because I'd have a problem giving a contract to somebody who could be in conflict with our ordinances. And to then, as it stated, place the SUP to get them in compliance, I have a problem with that as well.
In response to your question, Council Member, we could split these because one contract is for canine services, and that's the item that the speaker spoke on. The other one for equine, we would recommend moving forward with the award because we are off contract on that one.
Okay, so may I amend my motion to separate these two contracts? In one facing with the canine and one with the equine. Okay. On the equine, I think everybody should support that one. And
aye.
Okay, so back down to the canine. Given what was written here in this this specific block, I mean, first of all, can we postpone it till November 13th and it be adequate?
To explore the issues, I would have to consult with the Department of Code Compliance or Sustainable Development. I think they've done some preliminary research to determine if the violations exist.
Is right, and but if we moved it to November, my motion is to move it to the 13th. Do we want to have this discussion here and vote on it, or do we want, can we put it to the 13th and have some offline?
That would be fine. We do need a contract in place for this, but we could do an administrative action in the meantime to cover that period.
Okay, because and then we can get these questions answered in the next 3 weeks.
Yes.
And Chris, is that okay with you? Given that they're talking about Chapter 51 and dog runs and getting some clarification on if it's allowed.
Good morning. Chris Swecker, Director of Sustainable Development and Construction. I'm happy to answer any questions you have now. If you'd like to take it offline, we could do that. In general, I can tell you we have no evidence that the proposed vendor for this has any current code violations or zoning violations. The definition of an outside run, an interpretation was made by the building official a couple of years ago, actually based on Eastlake, where Dr. Fling is the veterinarian there, to determine that it's not just the physical standing of that structure, it's also the use of that area. So that they have a fenced-in area that is called a dog run is allowable as long as they are either leashed or monitored by an employee, a staff member, an owner during the time that they're out there. If they are left alone outside in an enclosed area without supervision, that would be considered an outside run. And as Dr. Fling indicated, for this specific location, since they are within 1,000 feet of residential, they would be required to either have an SUP or not have that outside run. We talked to code compliance. There have been no complaints against that location, so we don't know if they are monitoring the dogs while they're out there or not.
So can we let's go ahead and delay it for 3 weeks, because we probably need to get clarification from the individuals that have the dog run to stipulate how they manage the dogs out there, because to put a contract in place with a company that could be violating our own ordinances without any clarification is kind of alarming to me. And so I just want some clarification on how that's going to be handled and that we are in compliance.
Councilmember, I need to correct an earlier statement. Okay. We have already done an administrative action to extend this contract, so we would be coming back with a request for ratifying the services.
Okay.
Because these are essential services.
Yeah. Okay, so I would still stick with my motion to delay for 3 weeks and get some understanding of what is happening on this contract.
Deputy Mayor.
I'm just supportive of Ms. Blackman's motion for many of the same reasons she said. First, I had notice of this with just an email in the past couple of days, and so it's these issues are issues that are not just related to the services provided, but also the neighborhood and the community around it. And there's an extensive history even at this location and in others, so I want to make sure that we're doing the right thing. Thanks, Mr. Mayor.
Any further discussion? Would you just clarify the motion so we'll know what we're voting on?
Move to delay for 3 weeks this contract relating to DPD FDR's canine unit with Casalinda Animal Clinic.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion prevails.
Agenda item 49. Authorize a one-year stadium event funding agreement with Lone Star Sports LLC, a Texas limited liability corporation, for Lone Star Sports LLC to conduct the State Fair Showdown game at the Cotton Bowl Stadium in Fair Park on October 19, 2019, with Historic Black Colleges and Universities Collegiate Matchup featuring Texas.
I'm sorry, Madam Secretary, we need to back it up, members, really quickly, go back to the previous agenda item, because we didn't move the equine issue. We needed to actually
approve it.
My parliamentarian is telling me that we actually only officially moved on the canine, and we need to move on the equine. So
We need to go back to that agenda item, and we need someone to move on the other portion of the divided question.
I've moved to vote on the Lone Star Park Equine Hospital contract.
And there's a second discussion. Ms. Arnold, do you want to say something on that?
I was trying.
Ms. Blackman, anything else? All in favor? Any opposed? The item prevails.
Agenda item 49, authorize a one-year stadium event funding agreement with Lone Star Sports, LLC, a Texas limited liability corporation, for Lone Star Sports, LLC, to conduct the State Fair Showdown game at the Cotton Bowl Stadium in Fair Park on October 19, 2019, with Historic Black Colleges and Universities Collegiate Matchup featuring Texas Southern University and Southern University and A&M College, including the advertising, broadcasting, news media, and promotion activities, not to exceed $150,000. This item was pulled by Councilmember Mendelson.
Any discussion? I'm sorry, I keep saying any discussion. What I mean, is there a motion? Ms. Mendelson? Anyone?
Well, the question would be, Mayor,
move to approve.
It was pulled. Okay.
All right, is there a second?
Second.
Okay, I was wondering. Everybody still here? All right, Ms. Mendelson.
Yes, so this may be the most pro football council in the history of Dallas, and so I'm about to be extremely unpopular, maybe eating lunch by myself today. But I am going to oppose this motion. I'm going to oppose it because I don't think our taxpayers should be funding football. And I don't care what team it is. I'm a Longhorn. I don't think we should fund any football. I don't think that's our role. I don't understand what the goal of us funding this game or any game is. If we want to support student athletes, I think actually we should support the student athletes that actually live in Dallas. And frankly, right now we have a lot of student athletes that need support that we could put money for. And number three is, this is exactly the kind of thing Visit Dallas should be supporting, and that's what those tax dollars are for. Not our general funds, which are so precious, $150,000. Think of so many people we could help. So while I may be lonely today, I'm just going to tell you, I don't think this is a good use of our money.
Okay. Councilman Basildua.
Thank you, Mayor. While I respect your opinion, I do believe that it's a lot more complex than being a football fan. And we had a discussion during our budget process where we passed with flying colors, I might add, that we would include the amendment to have the $150,000 for this game. And with a little context for the record, this game, this amendment was brought forth to bring equity and a little bit of awareness to an HBCU matchup that has been brought as the third football matchup to the State Fair of Texas season, when the existing two football matchups already receive subsidies that are matched by other entities and given to by our tax dollars in the city of Dallas. So when I see these two football games for long times that receive tax dollars, and we have two HBCU football games coming into the State Fair of Texas to join a tradition, I believe that it's only equitable and only right for us either to go one direction or the other. And I know that we're not pulling funding from the other two games in those long-standing traditions, so I appreciate all of the support that we have that I had from everyone with that amendment to put this in the budget. It was a very successful game for the second annual State Fair of Texas football showdown this past weekend. So not only did we already approve it in the budget amendment process, and when approving the budget, the game has already taken place this past weekend. So I just want to, on the record, state that this is a lot more than just throwing tax dollars at football. I too will go back to what I stated during the amendment process, and that I did not approve of what the previous council did with giving stipends to ESPN, a.k.a. Disney, a very able and capable corporate entity that did not need our subsidy to have a game be put on, which was being requested. And they stood at the podium and said that to the previous council. So I think it's apples and oranges, and I just wanted to make sure that that was very clear on the record. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Ms. Arnold.
Yes, I need to have staff talk to me, come to the podium to address the data, the status as it relates to the distribution or of these funds. You're right, we voted during the budget. I don't think my hand, someone must have miscounted because I didn't support it. Where are we now since the game has already taken place? Why have we not already paid them? Or is there something in the clause that required us to wait after the game?
Yeah, I'm John Jenkins. I'm the interim director for the Parks Department. To answer your question, Councilwoman, yes, as part of the requirement in the agreement, we pay after the game has been played.
All right. Do you have the data in terms of the attendance? And I remember that's number one. Number two, I remember Councilmember Bazadur quoted some job incentives that had come about because as a result of the first game.
Yes.
And I had some concern about those numbers. So do you have some data that you can quickly share with us? Because I'm still not going to support this.
We don't have any job data, but as far as the attendance, I know it was below 10,000.
Below 10,000?
Yes.
Is it in closer to 5, 1?
I think the number is probably, we have two different numbers so far.
Okay.
We have a number of 8,000 plus, and we have a number of 5,000 plus.
Okay. All right, so we have where are we moving forward? Do we have a contract with them in motion for next year?
No, this is just a one-year contract.
All right, so that means they can come back to us?
They can always approach.
Okay, I just want to know
this.
If they
want to ask for funding.
But when we give them, if we vote today to give them the $150,000, we're through with our obligation.
You are through with your obligation.
All right. The next question, what can we get a status report just overall so for me moving forward? Because if we're going to have others coming and wanting to have a game and what have you, I would like to look at the data that this particular group has generated. I also want to acknowledge council that remember that Mr. Al Wash is here. He is one of the promoters of our PV and Grambling games and has been in existence for a number of years. So if you have any questions, you can ask him as well. But I think that would be my concern about moving forward as we talk about equity, but we want to make sure that we are actually giving data that is correct so that as we decide on allocations, we can do that. But I did want to get on the record whether or not this was an extended contract. So I think those are all my questions at this time, and I will continue to vote against this particular distribution of dollars to this particular team. Thank you.
Chairman Klein.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, and in the interest of continuing to promote the state fair and activity for our residents, I'll be supporting this, but I think it's important to make mention of the fact that the NCAA continues to promote indentured servitude by not paying these players. They bring a lot of money to the sport. They bring a lot of money to the networks. They bring a lot of money to the universities. And at a bare minimum, the NCAA should be requiring these universities to help these students complete their four-year degree regardless of whether they continue to play or not. And it's worth making mention because this is a big moneyed industry and the employees are not being paid. Thank you.
Mr. West.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Great point, Mr. Kleinman. That wasn't what I had hit my button for, but that resonated with me. I agree with Ms. Mendelson's concept on the Visit Dallas should be paying for this. Absolutely. I think moving forward, we need to talk about that a little bit more. But I will be supporting the motion because primarily because we went back and forth during the budget amendment process trying to find cuts. Councilman Bazadur was one of the most creative and also took some of the hardest hits in his district so that we can make the budget amendment process work. And we were able to get a unanimous budget passed with 15 oh votes. So, you know, this is one of the very few things that Councilman Bazadur asked for. And I think that is worth supporting today. And then to follow up on Ms. Arnold's question about job data, I think it would be interesting to see, you know, a little bit more of an economic impact for the city from future games. So I'd like to see you guys you know, study that and present some data in the future, because maybe this isn't a bad investment. Maybe it's a great investment for the city in terms of dollars, too, and jobs. So thank you.
Yes.
Mr. Narvaez.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'm not sure who to address this question to, whether it's staff or Mr. Basil do, but I'll ask it and then we can go from there. I remember during the budget amendment process that I had asked, because this was the ESPN, that we found out that the contract was null and void because the game was no longer being played in Dallas. And so I went with it, but I was also told that there was a match from Visit Dallas for this 150. Is that the case?
May I answer?
Yeah, go ahead.
So yes, you can. I was actually, that's why I pressed my button to clarify on both. Yes, that there was a match, and I forgot to say that this last round, but I did mention that in the amendment process, that Visit Dallas did contribute to this game in addition to matching on both of the other two games during the State Fair of Texas.
Okay, thank you. So this $150,000 was actually $300,000, is my understanding. Is that correct?
Do not know the total number contributed to either. I think that it was a half a million for Texas OU, and I only knew that for comparison, but I don't know the total number on both games, because I think that to Texas OU, Visit Dallas gave $200,000, so I don't know what the numbers are.
Okay. So there was something in addition to $150,000 given. So we don't know if it was the actual $150,000 or more. Okay. Well, that's what I wanted to bring up, was that there were other funds that were given. But I think this is something that, as you know, we had a discussion last week about Visit Dallas, and this is something that maybe in those contracts need to come up, is these games and how much more they need to contribute, whether it's from the TPID or from Visit Dallas's funds. These are something that we do every year. This is something that attracts a lot of folks to the city of Dallas. And it's good for our local residents as well as for our visitors. And I think this is something where we can start to really push them to contribute more out of their budget. I am going to support this, because I do believe in the equity of it. I do believe that it is how we get more folks to the state fair, and how we and bring more folks to be able to enjoy this and to be able to enjoy these games while they're at the state fair. Thank you very much, Mr. Mayor.
Ms. Gates.
Thank you, Mayor. A question. It mentions that the stipend won't be paid till after the game in November, as because it, and make sure that everything, the performance, the LLC performance under this agreement. So what was the performance criteria that was established?
There is no performance criteria.
Okay, go ahead. I can't hear you.
Basically, they just have to play the game and do all the associated, you know, broadcasting of the game and everything that goes with putting on the event at Fair Park. So,
and so they, it was broadcast in,
yes,
it. And it mentions in 2018 that there was TPID money, and as well as money from the state fair. Are we aware that that was paid again in 2019?
I don't know about this year. I do know that there was a request made to the TPID again. And so there's a Dallas Sports is working with TPID and the promoter to finalize that. But I think
and what kind of information do we get about the promoter? Any financials or?
We don't have any financials on the promoter.
Okay. This was put into the budget. I think that's probably when to be a. Kind of responsible and transparent. If we, it's probably not best practice if we put things in and then they meet the criteria that's required and we say no. For that reason, I'm going to support this. But I think next year going forward, we probably need that attendance. I mean, the stadium holds what, 80,000?
92.
So a little bit more than that. And I know it is the goal to have a game played there. The other two games that are played there get a stipend. But we want to probably have three successful games. So that's a discussion I think that needs to be had, is, you know, 5 or 8,000 is not, you know, we had these discussions about the other game that's moved the January game that's now moved to SMU, the smaller stadium.
that we're optimizing, you know, the limited weekends at the fair. So but those conversations next year, I think maybe we should have dollars related to the economic impact and how many people are attending before we agree to with the contract. So,
Ms. Arnold.
Yes, thank you. And I did just want to make sure I heard you correctly. We don't have data for the gain that's before the check is being paid dispersed based on this contract. Is that correct?
Well, we have 14 days to disperse the check.
Right, but you don't have the data.
No, we don't. We only have preliminary numbers.
All right. So what? So just a comment. So as we move forward, just for accountability purposes,
yes,
we shouldn't give any money out until we make sure that they have fulfilled all those requirements. Because heard it through the grapevine.
Because they didn't have performance metrics.
Right.
They have fulfilled the contract. They held the game. They held the broadcasting. If it's the will of the council for next year to support this game, then yes, we will build in the contract performance metrics, data focus. We will put that in the contract.
Right. I just wanted to support what Mrs. Gates was saying, and I'm still going to vote against it. But I'm simply saying a little bit perplexing that we're not getting adequate data before we handle off this. And then the last thing is, could you give me all the data? Thank you so much, Mr. Omar, for remembering. I need to get the data of what Visit Dallas is giving and what the city is giving to these groups so that we'll be able to make some decisions with more information. So thank you so very much.
Mr. Resendez.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I just quickly wanted to thank Councilwoman Mendelson for raising her concerns. You don't have to worry about eating lunch by yourself. I'll eat with you. But I do share your concerns and Ms. Arnold's concerns. But until we decide to pull funding from the other games and you know, hold them to the same standards that we're holding, that we want to hold this game to, then I'll be supporting this. So that's all I wanted to say. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who wants to make a comment on this or ask a question? I'll just say this. For the record, I love football. I do. I'm a big football guy. But I do love the city of Dallas and our city government and our commitment to transparency and efficiency even more than football. So I'm going to be supporting this as well. But I want to say this. I think going forward, we just need to throw this probably to government performance to look at just everything we do of a contractual nature. We need to be able to say that we put in the types of metrics that we know our residents expect of us to make sure that we're actually getting a return on these things. I mean, we have an emotional connection to certain things, sports, whatnot, but at the end of the day, we should have to hold football games to the same standards we're holding every other contract in the city too, which is if we put money into it, we're expecting some type of return, some measurable public policy benefit. And so psychic benefit is great, but we want to know on something like this that we're actually spending our money in a way that generates something of benefit to the citizens and residents of Dallas. So with that, if there's no more discussion, we'll vote. All in favor? Any opposed? Let the record show there's at least two. And the motion prevails.
We'll now move to our items for individual consideration.
Before we move on from the consent agenda completely, I just want to recognize Councilman Chairman West.
Point of information, Mr. Mayor. Yes. Did you say the motion fails?
It prevails.
Oh, prevailed. Okay. Thank you. I didn't hear correctly.
Very well today.
I've got a bit of congestion.
I've had some late nights with respect to this tornado.
Yes, we have.
So,
thank you, Mr.
I'm
Mayor.
I'm off my game today. I'm sorry. I'm trying to stay in it right. So, Mr. West.
Thank you for the moment of personal privilege, Mr. Mayor. Item 26, we've already passed through the consent agenda. I just wanted to just bring a little attention to it because it's a really cool project that was passed back in 2014 by former council, and it's an exciting new opportunity in affordable housing. It's a usage of the Cedar Branch Townhome Project using the Southwestern Medical Tax Increment TIF District funds to buy down the cost of 23 townhomes. So it's actually the first project to use TIF funds to actually buy down the cost of affordable housing and keep those homes affordable for people so they can move into an area, families, you know, quite possibly move into an area that will be, that they couldn't normally afford. The average price is around $400,000. So, you know, our amendment today really just extended the time of construction, but this is a great project. Kudos to EcoDev and Housing for putting this together. I think it's a good model to look at as we start rolling out the comprehensive housing policy that's coming up. My one concern with this is that we have, right now the city doesn't have a mechanism for an independent group to manage the buy-sell of these affordable homes. We're doing it. So if one of these homeowners moves out of their $150,000 home, we, the city, are going to be managing, vetting out the person that's going to replace them or buy the home. I think we've got to look really hard in the next couple of months at a community land trust, an independent group that will look at and vet these transactions going forward and kind of get that out of our hands and into a group that specializes in that. So, again, kudos to EcoDev. Thanks to Kevin Spath for briefing me on this and getting me up to speed. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
You are welcome. Mayor Medrano?
I just wanted to say thank you for highlighting District 2. Yeah, it's awesome. I'm excited about it. We're just trying to get them built as fast as we can. So, again, thank you.
Madam Secretary?
Thank you. We'll now move to our items for individual consideration. Agenda item 54 will be held until later in the meeting. Agenda item 55, authorize adoption of the 2020 city calendar.
Is there a motion? Is there a second?
Second.
Good. Discussion, Deputy Mayor.
I just want to reconstitute my discussion from previous. You will likely see at least all of the members on the Public Safety Committee. I was intending upon having more discussions with you the past couple of days, but got sidetracked by the storms. And so I don't have time to really figure out what this looks like in the best way. I want to give it a chance to John Fortune's out of town too, but have some of these discussions with our committee and see. But you'll likely see special called public safety meetings on a regular basis, and we'll try to get that out to everybody as advanced as we possibly can. But at this current time, certainly support where we're going with right now. Thanks.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor? Any opposed? The motion prevails.
Agenda item 56, authorize an amendment to the 2019 city calendar to 1, revise the start time of the city council agenda meetings on November 13, 2019 and December 11, 2019 from 2 o'clock p.m. to 3 o'clock p.m. and 2, include the addition of new committee names and times.
Is there a motion? Anyone? Okay, great. Deputy Mayor Magoo.
Thank you. I want to thank my colleague, Chairman Casey Thomas, for recognizing, but we currently have committees scheduled on November 11th, which is Veterans Day, during those ceremonies. And so he has asked, and I would make the amendment for him and in conjunction with him, that we move to amend the motion by rescheduling the November 11th council committees to November 12th, which is the Tuesday right after it, including workforce, education, and equity at 9 a.m. and public safety at 1 p.m. And that is my amended motion.
Members, you've heard the motion. It's been seconded. Any objection? Hearing none, the amendment's adopted. We're on the original motion as amended now. Any further discussion? All in favor? Any opposed? The amended motion is adopted.
Agenda item 57, authorize 1 supplemental agreement number 1 to the cooperation agreement between the City of Dallas and Texas Central Rail Holdings, LLC, Texas Central, regarding design by the United States Army Corps of Engineers, USACE, for a Lamar Levee flood wall extension as required by regulatory permitting. 2, the receipt and deposit of funds from the Texas Central to the Dallas High Speed Rail Fund in an amount not to exceed the cost that the USACE provides for the design of the Lamar Levee flood wall if and when, A, the US MACE provides the cost of design of the Lamar Levy flood wall, and B, Texas Central requests the city to submit a request for the USACE to move forward with the design of the Lamar Levy flood wall. 3, the establishment of appropriations in the Dallas High Speed Rail Fund in a pass-through amount not to exceed the cost for the design of the Lamar Levy flood wall provided by the USACE, as such costs may be amended by USACE and funded by Texas Central. And 4, the disbursement of funds to the USACE in accordance with the project cooperation agreement between the City of Dallas and the USACE in an amount not to exceed the cost provided by the USACE for the Lamar Levy flood wall design as may be amended.
Is there a motion? Any discussion? Hearing none. All in favor? Any opposed? The motion prevails.
Agenda item 58. Authorize the fourth of four 12-month renewal options to and an amendment of the grant agreement with the World Affairs Council of Dallas-Fort Worth for Economic Development and Protocol Services for the period October 1, 2019 through September 30, 2020, not to exceed $220,000.
Any discussion? Hearing none. All in favor? Any opposed? The motion prevails.
Agenda item 59, an ordinance amending Chapter 41, Smoking of the Dallas City Code by amending Section 41-1, 41-11, and 41-12 to 1, raise the legal age for the distribution, possession, purchase, consumption, and receipt of cigarettes and tobacco products from 18 to 21 in accordance with state law, and 2, provide a penalty not to exceed $200.
Is there a motion?
Move to approve.
Second.
Discussion, Ms. Mendelson?
I'm so thrilled what y'all did in Austin. This is one of the best things for our kids, and I'm so happy that, you know, we obviously have to do this to match the new state law about raising the age for smoking. But what it doesn't include is the vaping that is included in the state law, and so I'm just going to ask that hopefully we can take this up in government performance and include that. We have a huge vaping problem, and so I just wanted to kind of say that as sort of a beware. We're not done without including vaping in here. Thank you.
Thank you. Duly noted. Any further discussion? Mr. Kleinman?
I guess just a point of clarification, if it's in state law on the vaping issue, why is it not in this ordinance? And not for you, Ms. Mendelson, I'll ask the city attorney.
Yes.
Thank you.
I did ask him about this.
Well, maybe he can explain to everybody.
Councilman, what our ordinance does is our ordinance addresses where smoking is prohibited. So what the state law does, it basically addresses the retail sales. And so what they did in the state law is they increased it from the 18 to the 21. And so our ordinance kind of addressed that issue. But we haven't addressed the issue of, you know, prohibiting or regulating vaping. And so this is a clarification of our ordinance. Our ordinance just talks about smoking. Our ordinance doesn't talk about vaping.
Okay. So the state law is with regards to sales.
Correct.
That's why I was actually kind of curious why we had to mimic state law, but we're not. Actually, what we're doing is we're looking at our ordinances and aligning the age in our ordinances in locations smoking is allowed.
Right.
And so what Ms. Mendelson's saying is let's bring forth another ordinance that or an amendment later. Can we not just include vaping right now with
no,
the amendment?
Well, no, because what all we're doing is we're just increasing it. And so what?
Okay.
As Councilman members have a committee look at vaping and where you do it and all those other issues. And so.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you for the clarification.
Any further discussion? All right. Hearing none. All in favor? Any opposed? The motion prevails.
This concludes your items for this session, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Madam Secretary. It is 11:59 a.m. on October 23rd, 2019, and the City Council agenda meeting will now go into closed session under Section 551.074, Personal Matters of the Texas Open Meetings Act regarding consideration of appointment of a board or commission member, John J. Jones, Board of Adjustment alternate member. We are now at recess. We'll come back at 1 o'clock.
Mr. Mayor, birthdays.
Chair recognizes Ms. Blackman for an announcement.
Thank you. It is that time of the year. It's the birthday. This isn't my birthday. So we have two birthdays today around the horseshoe, Kara Mendelson and Adam Medrano. So we would like to have a moment to recognize them for their trips around the sun and sing happy birthday. And I cannot sing, so.
Adam's our singer, so.
Oh.
Get your mic on, Adam, and let's do it.
Happy birthday to you.
City Council agenda meeting is completed. It's closed session under Section 551.074 of the Texas Open Meetings Act. And at 1:05 p.m. on October 23rd, 2019, we've returned to open session. Madam Secretary.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. We'll now take up agenda item 54. Item 54 is consideration of appointments to boards and commissions. This afternoon, we do have nominees for individual, full council, and officer appointments. Your officer appointments will be separate under a separate motion to allow certain members to be appointed to the board first before being appointed an officer. Nominees for individual appointments to the Board of Adjustment, Judy Pollock is being nominated by Councilmember Arnold, and Michael S. Schwartz is being nominated by Mayor Johnson. To the Arts and Culture Advisory Commission, Jesse Hornbuckle is being nominated by Councilmember Arnold. Mr. Hornbuckle meets the visual arts special qualification. Suzanne N. Smith is being nominated by Councilmember Blewett. Ms. Smith meets the cultural institution management special qualification. And Samuel Santiago Estramira is being nominated by Mayor Johnson. Mr. Santiago Estramira meets the volunteer cultural board experience special qualification. To the Citizen Homelessness Commission, Kevin Cooper is being nominated by Councilmember Mendelson. Mr. Cooper meets the general public special qualification. To the City Plan and Zoning Commission, Brent Rubin is being nominated by Mayor Johnson. To the Community Police Oversight Board, Jose Rivas is being nominated by Councilmember Basil Dua. To the Housing Finance Corporation Board, Matthew Marchant is being nominated by Councilmember Gates, and Beatrice Alba Martinez is being nominated by Mayor Johnson. To the Judicial Nominating Commission, Sarah Martinez is being nominated by Councilmember Basil Dua. To the Park and Recreation Board, Daniel Wood is being nominated by Councilmember Basil Dua, and Arun Agarwal is being nominated by Mayor Johnson. To the Senior Affairs Commission, Debbie Diane Austin is being nominated by Councilmember Atkins. Ms. Austin meets the 55-plus years of age special qualification. To the South Dallas Fair Park Opportunity Fund Board, Leander T. Johnson is being nominated by Mayor Johnson. Mr. Johnson represents a cultural institution permanently housed at Fair Park special qualification. To the Youth Commission, Maria Fernanda Aguero is being nominated by Councilmember Resendez. Nominees for full council appointment to the Board of Adjustment alternate members, John J. Jones is being nominated by Councilmember Blackman. To the Reinvestment Zone 10 Board, Southwestern Medical, Mark A. Thompson is being nominated by Mayor Johnson.
Is there a motion? Discussion? All in favor? Any opposed? The motion prevails.
Your officer appointments are as follows. Michael Schwartz is being nominated chair of the Board of Adjustment by Mayor Johnson. Mark Thompson is being nominated chair of the Reinvestment Zone 10 Board, Southwestern Medical, by Mayor Johnson. Leander Johnson is being nominated chair of the South Dallas Fair Park Opportunity Fund Board by Mayor Johnson. And Nicole Williams is being nominated vice chair of the Judicial Nominating Commission by Deputy Mayor Pro Tem McGue.
Is there a motion? Any discussion? All in favor? Any opposed? Motion prevails.
We'll now move to your zoning agenda. Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Atkins would like to be recognized on Z11.
I move to defer this item to November 13, 2019.
Any discussion? All in favor? Any opposed? The motion prevails.
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Basil Duell would like to be recognized on item Z13.
Thank you, Mayor. I move to defer this item to January 22nd, 2020.
Second. Any discussion? All in favor? You want to say something else?
I just wanted to let the body know that we've worked on a good neighbor agreement, and we have agreed to allow the applicant to go through a few months, and we will come back and make sure that they have abided by the agreement.
Any more discussion? All in favor? Any opposed? Motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. With permission, I would like to take up agenda item Z12. Item Z12 is a public hearing regarding an application for and a plan development district for LI Light Industrial District uses on property on the north line of Interstate Highway 30 east of North Buckner Boulevard.
Mr. Mayor, we sent 92 notices to property owners within 500 feet of the area of request. We received 2 replies in favor and 18 in opposition. Due to denial by the City Plan Commission, this will require a 3-quarter vote to approve.
CPC has recommended denial without prejudice. Are there any individuals in the audience that would like to speak in opposition to the denial? We have one speaker. You may come forward. The opposition to the denial. You'll be given 3 minutes to speak. Please state your name and address for the record.
Good afternoon. My name is Nathan Hudson. I live in 2326 Burning Light Drive. So I live in the subdivision that is adjacent to the property that the applicant is requesting be rezoned. And so I'm here to represent my neighbors. Basically, the majority of us are opposed to this warehouse being built right behind our homes. We're concerned about things like noise from trucks backing up, their rumbling engines, things like that. We're concerned about pollution. We're concerned about having a giant eyesore right behind our neighborhood. And in fact...
I'm sorry, are you in opposition to the denial?
Yes, I'm in opposition to the... denial? Oh, I'm sorry.
It's a double negative. Yeah. We're sorry.
Sorry.
Okay. About the confusion. Sorry.
We're not...
Yeah, we're not taught to write that way, but it's how we do it.
I'm sorry. Is there anyone else in the audience that would like to speak in opposition to the denial? Any speakers in favor of the denial?
That's you.
Hey, so again, my name is Nathan Hudson, 2326 Burning Light Drive. So my neighbors and I oppose this warehouse, this rezoning. So many of my neighbors can't be here today because, you know, they work and could not get time off work. But my neighbors and I did go around to try and get in a sense of what public opinion was on this. So we went around and collected a petition from the neighbors. One of my neighbors and I went to most of the houses in our neighborhood. We were able to get into contact with 56% of the homes in our neighborhood. We got a total of 147 people who signed a petition saying that they are against rezoning this land for industrial development. This represents 95 homes out of the 170 homes in our subdivision. And we didn't even go to the subdivision that's immediately to our west. We did a little bit in the subdivision to the north. We could get hundreds more signatures. Of the people that we talked to, about 150 some odd, only two people expressed support for this rezoning case, citing that they maybe thought that more jobs would be brought to the area. So again, what we're worried about is that this warehouse would just destroy our quality of life. So having trucks that are there, that are rumbling, that are backing up, they have backup alarms. Currently, the applicant doesn't have any hours of operation restrictions on the warehouse. So these trucks could be coming in late at night, waking us up at 4 in the morning, et cetera. We're concerned about things like pollution, resale values, all of that type of stuff. So to us, this warehouse seems self-evidently bad, right? So I might imagine if you guys put yourselves in our shoes, if a company wanted to rip down whatever's right next to your backyard and build a warehouse there, I think you could see how, you know, that would be kind of a negative thing. So the last thing I wanted to say about this is, you know, when I bought my home and when many of our neighbors bought our home, what we did is we looked at the city plan and consulted that. So a big part of the reason that many of us did buy our homes was the zoning on the city plan surrounding our land. So I know that many of us are very concerned that it kind of feels a little bit like a bait and switch to have, you know, invested in our homes, to have bought our properties with the understanding that residences would be backdoor. And then to suddenly have, you know, it rezoned for industrial purposes. So our community is vehemently against this, and that's what I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you.
Are there any other speakers in favor of the denial? I have a speaker coming forward. You'll be given 3 minutes to speak. Please state your name and address for the record.
My name is Christine Gouldy, 7228 La Sobrina, and I'm speaking against this as conservation co-chair of the Dallas Sierra Club. One of our members just brought this to my attention yesterday, and I was concerned that this looks like another instance of the city conveniently putting a polluter next to the homes of people who are not rich and powerful enough to stop it. Light industry sounds like maybe they're making macrame handbags, right? But a warehouse surrounded by diesel burning trucks emits nitrous oxides and particulate pollutants just as a big factory with a huge smokestack would, except it's coming out of hundreds of little smokestacks from the trucks. So because it's not yet a light industrial area, I urge you to maintain that protection. Further, I understand this is a convenient location for this type of business. We have this type of business also in Addison and some parts of northern Dallas and Garland. Those places, it's always at least 500 feet away from a residence. That's still pretty close. But they're proposing to put this 120 feet from people's homes. That's just not right. Thank you.
Are there any other speakers in favor of the denial? No further speakers, Mr. Mayor. This item will require 3/4 vote for approval.
Thank you, Madam Secretary. Is there a motion? Mr. Basildua?
I move to deny this with prejudice.
Second. Any discussion?
I do have a question.
Ms. Arnold.
Thank you. I just wanted to, I need to get a clear understanding on the business, the business that's trying to move here. What is their business? Did you have an applicant? I'm trying to figure out what is their the nature of
it. It's a trucking warehouse. with, I believe, 18 bays.
So, I mean, just so I will understand, are they just transporting, or what are they transporting,
yes,
cement or macrame, or what is their business?
They did not have specifications of the product that was going to be transported.
Oh, okay. Well, that sounds good. Well, all right. Support the council member on that. That's kind of strange.
Mr. West.
Thank you. Just a question. Did you say with prejudice or without?
I said with. You know, this has been a tough case with a lot of community input, and I have gone back and forth on how this should be handled. Ultimately, the strongest sentiments, because I looked at different options on how I could handle this, whether it be deferral, whether it be back to Planning Commission to see how we can address the concerns from the community. But the ultimate thing that I wanted to avoid was to make any moves and then go back to the community and find out that there's really nothing that we can do for them to be okay with what's going to come here unless it's single-family homes. And that's what it was zoned for when these homes were purchased. There is enough of input from the community that I do have a great deal of support from others in the district that are on the perimeter of those that are directly affected. So it's been a tough one. And so I do understand what it means by the wording that I just used. But it kind of goes with along the same lines of me choosing to do this other than deferring it, because there's nothing that I'm going to be able to bring forth to the community that's going to get them to agree with the right use of the land behind this community being industrial.
Okay. Mr. Narvaez.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'm going to be supporting Mr. Bazaldua's motion because I have firsthand experience what it's like to have industrial shipping yards, trucking yards next to residential. It doesn't work. On Chalk Hill in Ledbetter, it's high noise, high pollutants, inability to park because these 18-wheelers end up parking on our residential streets even though they're not supposed to. It just ends up with a lower quality of life. And since this is already supposed to be a residential area, it sounds like they're, you know, from the numbers of the petition, overwhelmingly support denial. I'm going to stick with the community and let's increase their quality of life and help them hold out for a residential builder. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Mm-hmm. You're welcome. Mr. Blewett.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Directed to Mr. Bazaldua. So I'm not really hearing an argument for this. When you're talking about, you know, single family versus industrial and changing things like that, there had to be an argument somewhere. And when you said with prejudice, it tells me that there wasn't really a give and take, or I'm missing a piece of this. And I'd love to hear your perspective on what was the argument for this.
I'm kind of confused on your question.
Well, I know you're denying it with prejudice, but they had certainly when they came forward with this, they had an intent or they had an idea that they would be receptive in some fashion. Or maybe there were some negotiations and meeting the community desires. But I'm not really hearing it. I mean, I'm with you on this. I'm just trying to get a better understanding of what happened here.
Again, there is a lot of support, and the support is not from the community that is directly impacted.
Right.
The support is from organizations that have a lot louder voice and are a lot larger of organizations.
Right.
They are who I believe kind of carried the conversation a little bit for the community input piece for a while. When there were negotiations going back and forth, there were the applicant wasn't, it wasn't that the applicant is the bad guy. They were willing to make changes. And they were willing to, you know, do this and that. There were, I believe, two items that were recommended that the applicants did not agree upon, which brought me to my original thought in deferring the item and scheduling a meeting with myself and all the opposition. And in addition to that, scheduling another community input meeting with the developer and all of the community, including those who are in favor and the support that they had. Again, what I'm trying to avoid here is ultimately, and I think that y'all, the majority, would conclude, the community is not going to budge. This isn't about what the applicant can do. So it's not about what has been given. It's about not continuing to waste time for both the applicant and the community, because there's nothing the applicant can do other than build single-family homes on this lot to make this community okay with what's going to go there.
Okay. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, pretty much. Like I said, I was just trying to figure out how you got to this point, because it seems like if they got this far in the process, there should have been some indication of some give and take and that there might have been a deal. And I'm hearing single-family was the deal. And
essentially, one of those two items that was not agreed upon by the applicant was to allot a certain amount of the land in the backside that was closest to the residential homes and allow for there to be single-family homes on the perimeter of their property, and that was not agreed upon. So, yes, okay, it was still a compromise, but it did incorporate single-family homes on that property, and that was not agreed upon.
Well, look, I'm supporting you on this. I just want to understand a little bit more when you're looking at a massive zoning change like that.
Full disclosure, I was also, you know, originally thinking, man, this is a tough part of land. I want to talk to the community and try to maybe convince them otherwise. I don't know that we're going to get single-family homes in this land. I have since spoke to developers who have convinced me otherwise. And I think that it is always best to go with the sentiments of the community.
I'll be supporting you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Arnold.
Thank you. And we do want to, I know I want to support my community and would hope that when I make my arguments that this council would support me as I'm supporting Mr. Bazadua on his position. But what I also want to underscore is that we as a council, and especially since we're dealing with quality of life here, that we've got to change the way we do business and where these companies are locating. Because in many instances, you see there's a pattern. They're going to be in the southern sector and then the poor neighborhoods and the neighborhoods where you don't have the advocacy and they can just come and promise 12 jobs and we go along with it. So we have got to take a stronger position. I know that I am because we are impacted by a number of environmentally challenging businesses in our district. So I do want to underscore that as we move forward. And I'm also impressed by the fact of the use of the petition. Because what we're finding when we have some of these zoning cases is these notifications are going to the owners. And so the owner oftentimes is not there. And so with the use of the petition where you have live bodies, that whether they're renting or owning, but if they have a stake in that neighborhood, I think that petition gives us a little more leverage and it speaks to the conversation and that it gives you more muscle in your argument to protect that community. So I am supporting on you this wholeheartedly, and I'm just encouraging us as a council to rally around our neighborhoods and the delegates who have these neighborhoods who are impacted by these industrial communities because they have cheap land. And so we've got to change the business, the way we do business. So I support you on that, and I did want to give my position on that, whether it was lengthy or not. You'll be okay, but we, at the end of the day, we have to fight for these communities. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there any further discussion? All right, members, you've heard the motion. The motion is to deny with prejudice, correct? All in favor? Any opposed? Motion's denied.
Thank you, Ms. Mayor. We'll now move to agenda item.
Without the motion. The motion prevails. The The motion prevails, and
thank you, Mr.
We're moving
Mayor.
On. Thank you.
We'll now move to agenda item Z9. Z9 is a public hearing and an ordinance granting an amendment to subdistrict E2 within Plan Development District Number 305, City Place, on the northeast corner of North Central Expressway and Haskell Avenue.
Mr. Mayor, we sent 25 notices to property owners within 500 feet of the area of request. We received 5 replies in favor and none in opposition.
Are there any individuals in the audience that would like to speak in opposition to the CPC recommendation? Any speakers in favor? Have a speaker? Will you please come forward? You'll be given 3 minutes to speak. Please state your name and address for the record.
Yes, my name is Andrew Astman. I live at 4523 Belmont Avenue, about 8 minute walk north of the project in question. I've lived in the neighborhood about 30 years, and I suppose my first involvement with the city planning operation was the Kroger project at the corner of Haskell and Capitol. And at both the city planning meeting as well as the city council, I requested that the city require the planner, the developers, to provide pedestrian access along the western.
I'm sorry, I just want to clarify something. Are you speaking on item number Z9?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah. I asked that the city require the developer to provide pedestrian access along the western edge so that people within the neighborhood would have direct pedestrian access to the City Place DART station. It was denied. The city was not interested. Next involvement was with the Sam's Club at Haskell and Central. They made a presentation to our neighborhood, and it was only several months later that we discovered that the presentation made to us by the developers by Trammell Crow was a complete fabrication. It was a lie. It had no relationship to what they were actually planning to do. So when we were invited to the presentation by De La Vega of this project, I went with great skepticism. And I focused naturally on pedestrian access from Belmont through to the City Place DART station. And much to my surprise, not only was pedestrian access provided from Belmont, it went through a integrated area of high-rise buildings, street-level retail, landscaping, a wonderful asset to our neighborhood. I've been to approximately 2 more presentations at De La Vega's offices. I continue to be impressed by the project. I think it will be a great asset to our neighborhood. I also think it'll be a great asset to the city. And for those reasons, I hope you vote in favor of the project. Thank you.
Thank you.
Are there any other speakers in the audience that would like to speak in favor of the CPC recommendation? No further speakers, Mr. Mayor.
Mayor Medrano.
Thank you, Mayor. I move to approve the zoning change as recommended by the City Plan Commission.
Any discussion? All in favor? Any opposed? The motion prevails.
We'll now move to agenda item Z15. Z15 is a public hearing and an ordinance granting a new sub-district for mixed uses on property on the east line of Cesar Chavez Boulevard, west of Good Latimer Expressway, north of Corinth Street, and south of Dawson Street.
Mr. Mayor, we sent 68 notices to property owners within 500 feet of the area of request. We received 3 replies in favor and none in opposition.
Are there any individuals in the audience that would like to speak in opposition to the CPC recommendation? Any speakers in favor? Have a speaker coming forward. Be given 3 minutes to speak. Please state your name and address for the record.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mr. Mayor. My name is Michael Prozekwas. I live at 1602 Belmont in the Cedars in Dallas. And I want to reiterate their support of 3 separate community groups that are in favor of this. Dallas Heritage Village, I'm on the executive board of that. The Millers Ferry Row Homeowners Association, which is the nearest HOA to this project, and the Cedars Neighborhood Association. And we are pleased to support this So Good at Cedars project in our neighborhood. And the community really welcomes the development and the anchor on the eastern portion of the neighborhood, which is growing but needs a little push. And we believe a large project like this will help ignite the important connection between the Dallas Heritage Village, Farmers Market, the Cedars, downtown, Deep Ellum, and Fair Park. We've seen a great deal of change in our neighborhood in recent years, and our fellow community leaders have helped steward smart growth that fits well with the feel of the neighborhood. The whole global team has participated in numerous neighborhood meetings, and very early on in the process met with the neighbors, the leaders of the community, the board of the Dallas Heritage Village to proactively seek the feedback on the shape of this development. And we feel that the mix of renovated old buildings, new multifamily, park and open spaces that they have planned will be and bring exciting energy to this section of the Cedars. And we respectfully ask that you support this. Thank you.
Thank you.
Are there any other speakers in favor? No further speakers, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Madam Secretary. Mayor Medrano.
Thank you, Mayor. I move for approval.
Any discussion?
Yes.
Mr. Medrano.
You know, this is a very exciting project that's going to connect the farmers market and the Cedars. Like Mr. Prozekwa said, the east portion of the Cedars needs a little push. You see there's growth of Good Latimer all the way up to Eckerd, and this is the area that needs some development. They're going to have affordable housing. They're going to have a park that runs right through the whole project. I don't know if you guys have seen it or met with these folks, but it's going to be an amazing project. Super proud of it. The developers worked with the neighbors, with Heritage Village, and everybody involved, and I'm just excited to see it coming. It's going to be a really great game changer in that part of the Cedars. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor? Any opposed? Motion prevails.
We'll now move back to your zoning consent agenda. Your zoning consent agenda consisted of agenda items Z1 through Z8. Item Z2 is being pulled by Councilmember Narvaez, and item Z7 is being pulled by Councilmember Basil Dua. Therefore, your zoning consent agenda consists of agenda items Z1, Z3 through Z6, and Z8. I'll read those items into the record. Z1 is a public hearing and an ordinance granting an amendment to Plan Development District Number 748 and an ordinance granting an amendment to Specific Use Permit Number 1385 for pedestrian sky bridges on the northwest and southwest corners of Medical District Drive and Southwestern Medical Avenue and East Line of Medical District Drive. Z3 is a public hearing and an ordinance granting an amendment to and renewal of Specific Use Permit Number 1602 for a vehicle storage lot on property on the southeast corner of South Central Expressway and Bateman Avenue. Z4 is a public hearing and an ordinance granting a CR Community Retail District on property bounded by West Mockingbird Lane, Lemon Avenue, and Roper Street. Z5 is a public hearing and an ordinance granting a specific use permit for an industrial outside not potentially incompatible use limited to a concrete batch plant on property on the south side of California Crossing Road, west of Bickham Road. Z6 is a public hearing and an ordinance granting the renewal of specific use permit number 1796 for an attached projecting non-premise district activity video board sign on property on the south line of Main Street west of South Irvay Street. Z8 is a public hearing and an ordinance granting an amendment to Plan Development Subdistrict Number 102 within Plan Development District Number 193, the Oaklawn Special Purpose District, on the southwest corner of North Central Expressway and Cambrick Street. Are there any individuals that would like to speak in opposition to any of the zoning agenda items that were just read into the record? We have two individuals. Please come forward. You both may come forward. Each individual will be given 3 minutes to speak. Please state your name and address and the item you're speaking on.
Yes, my name is Larry Smith. My address is 5320 North Haven Road in Dallas. I'm speaking on Z5, the concrete batching plant. I'm a property owner at Newkirk and Northwest Highway, which sits right in front of this area that they're going to put the concrete batching plant in. Right now, we are inundated with large trucks going up and down California Crossing and going across Newkirk to Northwest Highway. I've recently invested a good deal of money in a shopping center right there, where I replaced a liquor store and a convenience store with a medical office and with a Mexican restaurant and with a restaurant supply company. And this is going to negatively affect their businesses there. Right now, the area that they're talking about putting this batching plant in is dirt and gravel, and it creates lots of dust. Also creates, again, congestion with large, huge trucks going through there, and which is going to increase significantly if y'all allow this batching plant to come in here, you know, within 500 feet of retail businesses. I think it's a bad move. It needs to be rethought, and I ask you to please deny this. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker in opposition. Be given 3 minutes to speak. Please state your name and address for the record and which consent item you're speaking on.
My name is Clay Huddleston. Address is 10525 Newkirk Street, which is speaking about Z5 as well. I'm also in opposition to Z5. I had a few things just to kind of point out very quickly, but the use area, I spoke to both Dr. Udrea and Commissioner Carpenter in the past couple of weeks, and they've been extremely helpful, but I did disagree with the staff's recommendation of the use area. They showed on the maps that, you know, this area was mostly industrial, but what I would like to do is back up Mr. Smith's argument and say that there is quite a bit of retail in this area. I had a picture, but my computer's not pulled up. But there's quite a bit of retail in this area. There's some restaurant uses. The property that I represent is a flex office. There's probably about a 60-40 office to warehouse component. Lots of cars in the area, so dust is a big concern to us, as well as just we feel that this could be an upcoming area, and this is a mix. Putting a batch plant in here is a mismatch for what this area could be. In addition, I just wanted to point out to the fact that the Planning and Zoning Commission's recommendation for the special use permit was contingent upon several requirements, one of them being washing, dust control, washing the trucks down to get the dust off. This area where this batch plant is proposed is within a heavy flood zone. It's right there, in the Luna Vista Golf Course area over there in Irving, where Irving meets Dallas, and you have, a big floodplain going right through there. And I do have some environmental concerns about washing off these trucks and whatever sediment in ETC, et cetera, are washing into this floodplain. And then lastly, I'm not against these guys doing business. I'm not against them coming in here and making money, because that's what my client is trying to do as well. But, if this dust control is just the biggest thing for us, the commission's recommendation spelled out that, the whole area should be paved. I manage industrial properties for a living. I have some sort of expertise on this. Paving, in my mind, is a technical term. It means asphalt. In any heavy industrial area, which is certainly what you would consider for a concrete batch plant, it really needs to be concreted with very strict requirements for the concrete. Otherwise, that area is just going to disintegrate and deteriorate, and it's going to create a dust problem all over again. So I'm just curious as to really, what plans are in place. If it just says paving in the commission's recommendation that you guys are going to approve, how are we going to prevent the area from breaking down and creating a dust problem all over again? So that's all I have today. Thank you for hearing me.
Thank you. Are there any other speakers in opposition? Are there any individuals in the audience that would like to speak in favor of any of the zoning consent items that were read into the record? We have a speaker coming forward. You'll be given 3 minutes to speak. Please state your name and address for the record and which item you're speaking on.
Yes. My name is Ida Rodriguez, 2925 Branch Oaks Drive, Garland, Texas, and I'm speaking on behalf of Z5. I just want to let council know that we are following all TCEQ requirements. Paving is concrete in this instance. They have detention ponds. They have a 100% water reclamation. I know that that's one of the concerns, and they will be pouring concrete. They will not be pouring asphalt. So, and I'm here available for any questions that anyone might have.
Thank you.
Are there any others in the audience that would like to speak in favor? No further speakers, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Madam Secretary. Is there a motion? Any discussion? Ms. Arnold.
Just a quick question. I just pulled the document. I see it's in District 6. Could you just help me just to understand here, if I could, Mayor, speak to the council member. Is this batch plant close to the other batch plant that was approved a couple of years ago?
Which agenda item specifically? Z5? Sure.
So the current location is on West Commerce Street, so right at the bottom of the hill from, like, the Belmont, La Loma neighborhood. So it's maybe 3/4 of a mile away from where this council had moved that mega concrete batch plant behind the only middle school in West Dallas, inside of a neighborhood. So this one will be leaving a residential neighborhood and moving into an industrial area where it actually belongs.
All right. So what was the name of the school, if I could just...
Edison.
Edison,
now known as Thomas Jefferson High School, which we are proudly welcoming to West
Dallas.
Right.
That's what I'm trying to get to. So the kids are being subjected to that batch plant there.
Correct.
And you have another one that not too far from them.
Correct.
All right. And so the only reason I'm asking is because sometimes I I'm talking to constituents and they get confused about decisions that we make. So I'm still, you're saying it's in an area where it belongs, but I'm still hesitant because of some environmental issues and some due diligence that I think we have to start doing on our end as a council by giving these companies an opportunity to continue to come into our communities where we're mm-hmm. underserved and the advocacy is not there and the groups don't have the means of fighting. So my conscience is not, now I respect your position on this, but I want you to know that I am a strong environmentalist and I cannot in good faith support this particular notion of another batch plant coming into a community that has been victimized so much by these types of businesses. So thank you so much for that clarification.
Okay, so we're about, is there any further? Get Mr. Narvaez.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. So I just want to make sure people are clear. This batch plant is currently in West Dallas in a residential neighborhood. It is leaving, which was requested by the community and by myself, and it's moving into northwest Dallas, into an industrial area where there is no residential around it. So we're taking it out of residential and moving it to a industrial area where it's with like businesses and other folks that are similar to them so that it actually matches where they belong. So leaving residential, moving to North Dallas into an industrial area. And away from a school, not anywhere near a school. And this is exactly what we're trying to do in the West Dallas area so that these environmental issues don't affect residential areas.
Thank you. I thought it was going to be two in neighborhoods with residential. Okay.
Okay, so we're all clear on that. And any other questions on any other consent zoning item? All in favor? Any opposed? Motion prevails.
Agenda item Z2 is a public hearing and an ordinance granting an amendment to and renewal of specific use permit number 1750 for a commercial motor vehicle parking use on property on the west corner of Chalk Hill Road and Fitchburg Street.
Mr. Mayor, we sent 14 notices to property owners within 200 feet of the area of request. We received 2 replies in favor and none in opposition.
Are there any individuals in the audience that would like to speak in opposition to the CPC recommendation? Any speakers in favor? Have one speaker. Be given 3 minutes to speak. Please state your name and address for the record.
Mr. Mayor, members of the council, my name is Michael Coker. I represent the applicant in Z2. I believe that Council Member Navarez is going to change it from an automatic renewal to a 2-year SUP, and we're fully in favor of that. I can answer any questions that you might have.
Are there any other speakers in favor? No further speakers, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Madam Secretary. Mr. Narvaez.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move to approve the specific use permit for a 2-year period without automatic renewals.
Second. Discussion? Hearing none. All in favor? Any opposed? Motion prevails.
Agenda item Z7. It's a public hearing and an ordinance granting the renewal of specific use permit number 2087 for a recycling buyback center used for the collection of household metals and recyclable materials on property on the northwest side of Hickory Street, northeast of Malcolm X Boulevard.
Mr. Mayor, we sent 7 notices to property owners within 200 feet of the area of request. We received no replies in favor and none in opposition.
Are there any individuals in the audience that would like to speak in opposition to the CPC recommendation? Any speakers in favor? No speakers, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Madam Secretary. Mr. Basil Dua.
Thank you, Mayor. I move to approve the zoning changes as recommended by the City Planning Commission with the following change. This specific use permit expires October 23rd, 2020.
Discussion? Mr. Basil Dua, anything?
I am moving it from 1 year, and from 2 years to 1 year. This sits right in, not really in the middle of a residential, but there is residential creeping up there with how development is moving in my district, and I'd like for the community to have the flexibility to choose whether or not they want to recycle in right where it lays. So that's why I'm making this change.
Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor? Any opposed? Motion prevails.
Item Z10 is a public hearing and an ordinance granting the renewal of specific use permit number 1661 for a public or private school limited to an open enrollment charter school on property generally bounded by Beckley Mead Avenue, South Hampton Road, Westfall Drive, and Stoneview Drive.
Mr. Mayor, we sent 15 notices to property owners within 400 feet of the area of request. We received no replies in favor and none in opposition.
Are there any individuals in the audience that would like to speak in opposition to the CPC recommendation? Any speakers in favor? No speakers, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Madam Secretary. Chairman Atkins.
I move to approve the zoning change and recommend by the City Planning Commission with the following change. This specific use permit expires October 23rd, 2014, and is eligible for an automatic renewal for the additional 5-year period.
Is there a second? Discussion?
Oh,
I do have a
correction.
Question.
This permit, use permit, expired October 23rd, 2024. I said 2014. Didn't
right, right. Thank That's you. What you said.
Ms. Arnold.
Right. So I'm glad you corrected that because I caught that. So is this going, you're trying to give them an automatic 10 years with no other? Okay.
It's an automatic 5 years, but staff still can come back and look at it.
Okay. So one of the things, actually rendering now and can't finish reading, one of the things I wanted to comment on is the use of their traffic plan, their site plan.
Yes.
And because we have to keep monitoring that as a community and perhaps city manager, we can put a mechanism in so the staff is more aggressive now in holding these charter schools feet to the fire. So have you checked that?
Yes, can I respond to that?
Yes,
Ms.
sir.
Neely, would you come forward, please? They do have a traffic plan. There is another way the road had been approved. It's not just a Hampton exit, egress or regress, but you also have one on the west side of the school. Neely, you want to reply to that, please? So inform
us on. The traffic study after will be required to be submitted to us by November 1st of 2021. So every odd year, they'll have to submit something to staff for us to review. We have gotten better at asking for those, and we're now proactively asking and not waiting for schools. So we do have a mechanism in place, and if it doesn't get submitted, we go to Plan Commission and let them know.
All right. So that's something I think I want to kind of continue to work on, city managers. We don't need to be asking them. They should be automatically giving because it's a struggle.
Right.
But back to your comment, I wanted to make sure that I also put this statement in that the Dallas police are asking that we consider being a part of the conversation when it comes to these traffic plans so they can kind of help us to begin to foresee some of the issues so we're just not calling the police to be the safety patrol
for these schools. So I did want to put that in there on the record. Thank you, Mr. Atkins.
You're kindly welcome.
That was so sweet. Any further discussion?
You want us to be together.
We do.
Remember, we're
we
building
do.
All that.
You've got to take it to a whole new level. any further discussion? All in favor? Any opposed? Motion prevails.
Item Z14 is a public hearing and an ordinance granting a specific use permit for the sale of alcoholic beverages in conjunction with a general merchandise or food store 3,500 square feet or less on property on the northeast corner of C.F. Hahn Freeway and South Masters Drive.
Mr. Mayor, we sent 9 notices to property owners within 200 feet of the area of request. We received no replies in favor and none in opposition.
Are there any individuals in the audience that would like to speak in opposition to the CPC recommendation? Any speakers in favor? We have a speaker coming forward. You'll be given 3 minutes to speak. Please state your name and address for the record.
Kendra LaRache, 900 Jackson Street, Dallas, Texas, 75202. I'm here to answer any questions if there are.
Thank you. Are there any other speakers in favor? No further speakers, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Madam Secretary. Mr. Resendez.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move to approve the zoning change as recommended by the City Plan Commission with the following change. Prohibit the sale of alcoholic beverages through the drive-through window.
Discussion, Mr. Resendez?
No discussion.
Ms. Arnold?
Thank you, Mayor, for acknowledging me on that. But I do want to say for the record, I have my button on and I meant to turn it off.
Okay. It's always challenging. Anyone else? All right, seeing no discussion, all in favor? Any opposed? Motion prevails.
Item Z16 is a public hearing and an ordinance granting an MS-2A multifamily district on property southwest of Rural Avenue and northeast of Harry Hines Boulevard.
Mr. Mayor, we sent 18 notices to property owners within 200 feet of the area of request. We received 3 replies in favor and 2 in opposition.
Are there any individuals in the audience that would like to speak in opposition to the CPC recommendation? Any speakers in favor? Have a speaker coming forward. Please state your name and address for the record.
Good afternoon, Your Honor, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Rob Baldwin, opposite 3904 Elm Street, Suite B in Dallas. I would like to offer some deed restrictions on this. This is a companion case of the zoning y'all approved about a month and a half ago. It's currently zoned CS or heavy commercial, but the only way to get to it is through residential neighborhood, and we're asking it to be rezoned to residential, but with offering the deed restrictions to prohibit flat roofs on it, so it matches the neighbors to our south and east, and to say that any units that are facing Mail Street have to have actual entrances and porches facing Mail Street. So that mirrors what was approved on the adjacent property, and I'd like to offer those here as well, please.
Thank you. Are there any other speakers in favor? No further speakers, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Madam Secretary. Deputy Mayor.
I move approval with the deed restrictions just stated by Mr. Baldwin. I'm sorry. Come here. Hold on, let me finish it. Let me offer proper language.
Yes.
I move to close the public hearing and approve the zoning changes as recommended by the City Planning Commission, subject to the deed restrictions volunteered at the podium, with the ordinance and deed restrictions to return on a later council agenda.
Any discussion?
No, sir.
Hearing none. All in favor? Any opposed? Motion prevails. Well done, Deputy Mayor.
Thank you very much.
We'll now move to PH1. PH1 is a public hearing and an ordinance granting the creation of a new sub-district in the central CBD sub-district within the downtown special provision sign district on property on the northeast side of Pearl Street between Ross Avenue and San Jacinto Street.
Mr. Mayor, we sent 15 notices to property owners within 200 feet of the area of request. We received no replies in favor and none in opposition.
Are there any individuals in the audience that would like to speak in opposition to the CPC recommendation? Any speakers in favor? No speakers, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Madam Secretary. Mr. Blewett.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move to approve the item as recommended by the City Plan Commission.
Is there a second? Thank you. Any discussion?
Mr. Blewett? Discussion.
Hearing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion prevails.
Item PH2 is a public hearing to receive comments regarding the application for and approval of the field permit and removal of the floodplain SP prefix from approximately 5.9 acres of the current 49.6 acres of land located at 8201 Bunnyview Road within the floodplain of Floyd Branch and Newton Creek, field permit 19-01. Are there any individuals in the audience that would like to address the City Council on this item? No speakers, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Madam Secretary. Chairman Atkins?
I move to approve the public hearings, receive comment.
Second. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor? Any opposed? Motion prevails.
Item PH3 is a public hearing to receive comments regarding the application for and approval of the field permit and removal of the floodplain SP prefix from approximately 0.31 acres of the current 4.07 acres of land located at 8605 Ferguson Road within the floodplain of South Fork of Ash Creek, field permit 18-08. Are there any individuals in the audience that would like to address the City Council on this item? No speakers, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Ms. Blackman?
I move we close the public hearing and approve this item.
Second.
Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor? Any opposed? Motion is adopted.
Mr. Mayor, this concludes your items for the second session. We'll now go back to your open microphone speakers. We do have one who has registered, Obias Barnett. Mr. Barnett, are you present? Not present, Mr. Mayor. So this concludes your open microphone speakers.
Thank you very much, Madam Secretary. Is there anybody else need to say anything? All right. Well, the time is 2 o'clock
p.m. I would love to say something, actually. Is that all right?
Yes, please.
So I would just like to say that I think you've done a great job with this whole storm. And we've joked a little bit about conducting the meeting because you've had no sleep. But you've done a great job. And look at the city. We had no fatalities. You got grilled at the press conference about what could we do better. But there's nothing. And our first responders, the city manager, the city staff, I mean, I just say thank you so much for everything you've done. Mayor,
thank you very much.
Hats off to you.
It really is a testament to our city staff and our first responders. They've done a great job. So thank you so much for that. Anyone else?
Yes.
All right.
I said yes.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. I didn't see you there.
I'm here.
Ms. Arnold.
Thank you. I do want to commend you and follow up with Mrs. Councilwoman Mendelson's comments and observations. Also want to stress the importance of this announcement. We are hosting through District 4 a community salute to our veterans who have given of them their lives and their sacrifice on November 9th, 9 a.m., Lancaster Corridor. So we're encouraging all the council members to be a part of this community awareness for our veterans, and we cannot do enough for our veterans, but this is just a gesture. But we do need help and we do need support, and we would love to see staff members, council members with us at that parade, November 9th, 9 a.m., starting at Lancaster and Illinois all the way down to Patriots Crossing. Thank you so very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Chairman Narvaez for the close.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. And I thank you, Ms. Mendelson, for speaking up and saying those kind words. I want to also commend our mayor for stepping up. And you did a great job today. There's several of us without much sleep, but I want to commend you for running a smooth meeting and for your leadership that started since Sunday night. TC, thank you to you and your crew. Joey Zapata, maybe you're getting a nap finally, but he was on the ground running and did a fantastic job communicating with each of us. And I also want to commend my fellow colleagues who were affected, Mr. Magoo, Ms. Gates, and Mr. Kleinman. I know each of them have been out there day and night, as I have been, trying to make sure that our residents have been taken care of. We're still continuing that. And just hats off to every City of Dallas employee for all their hard work, their efforts. I know we've got a long road ahead of us, but they're doing a fantastic job, our first responders. And also want to thank Encore and Atmos
for stepping up. I joked with Encore earlier because they said that I was, gave me some accolades for, keeping people up to date. And I was like, well, unfortunately, this isn't my first natural disaster in my district. We got a lot of experience, but I just want to make sure that everybody knows that Encore, Atmos, AT&T, everybody is trying desperately to get everything back to where it needs to be. But we've got a long road, and I know with leadership of our mayor, our city manager, and the rest of this council and our city staff, we're going to get there. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, and Deputy Mayor for the real close.
So many thank yous go around. I'm not going to do it all, but I want to just share one story. Yesterday, we're cleaning up one of our churches, tons of volunteers all over the place, and one kind of random guy shows up, only speaks Spanish, and it turns out I'm the only one that can communicate with him there during the time, and I thought he was looking for a job. Yes, who's the boss? Who's here? What's going on? Got him. He said he wanted to work, show us he was going to work, and he just got to work and started working alongside with all the volunteers. I asked him later, I said, look, I want to thank you formally. Can I write you a letter? And he basically said, I said, where do you live? And he was one of our homeless folks that just lived in the area, didn't have a place where he was living, and he just spent about 3.5 hours cleaning up a church and dragging tree limbs and everything with all of us. And so that's the kind of character of people that are coming together to help all of us around this community. So I wanted to thank him, Mr. Martinez. That's all I know about you, but he's in some of our pictures, so good guy. Thank you.
Thank you so much. And thank you all for sharing those closing remarks. The time's now 2:04 p.m., and this meeting of the Dallas City Council is adjourned.